Okay, welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 14. I'm here with my main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
I'm pretty good this week, Dave. How have you been?
Mate, I've had a big week as always. The first thing I want to say up front of the show is we're doing Spider-Girl Legacy as our trade of the week, and we're doing a Wonder Woman review, a spoiler review, which we've already recorded, and will be half an hour into the show. So you jump forward half an hour, that's when the spoiler review will be. Am I right in saying that, Stu?
No, you've got it backwards,
oh,
Dave.
Sorry. I've got it wrong.
When we're going to cut to the spoiler review, skip forward half an hour if you don't want any spoilers.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
And then you won't get spoiled.
You luckily, jump forward half an hour that, now, that's a good point. Get a that's a good point. Spoiler. That's a very good point. So, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. But, well, regardless.
Don't jump forward half an hour now.
Don't jump forward half an hour now. Stick around. We'll tell you when, and then jump forward half an hour because that's how long the spoiler review is. Am I right?
That's right.
Thank you. I got there in the end.
Dave's getting excited.
I was getting very excited. It's been a very big week. Now, first things first, Joe, I want to put this up front of the show because it relates to something we did on a previous show. And this is, sadly we're recording this show on a week where last weekend we had the London Bridge attacks. And, I mean, this is a show, and Stu kind of laughed at me when I said that, but I really do believe this is a show with laughter and light at its heart. We take a lighthearted look at things. We're sarcastic and everything, but at the end of the day, Stu and I both, we have a lot of love in our hearts and a lot of light, and that's what this show's about. And Ariana Grande performed and organised the Manchester One Love benefit concert to benefit the victims of the Manchester bombing incident at her concert for about 3 weeks ago. And, I mean, that's something very close to my heart. And I think a lot of people's. And in these darkest of days, we must remember to find some joy. And I watched quite a bit of the Manchester One Love benefit concert. And it really was a good concert. And it was really well organized. And she's an absolute sweetheart. I just feel so badly that it happened at her show. And I know, you know, I think she did a bit extra to what a lot of people would do.
I mean, personally, I'm not a fan of that genre of music at all. But I think it's a great...
She's a lovely girl, though.
She's come out. And face this kind of fear that she's got now.
Yeah, true.
It's not easy for someone of any age, let alone someone so young, to go through this.
Exactly. And, I mean, look at these people. These people are maniacs. Like, you're a target. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
the fact that she's gotten out and done this concert, I think, props to her. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. And that's what we're saying.
And it was a standout show, sold out. Amazing.
Had great guests, and she's playing to her fans who are primarily young kids who've had to really experience this. Like, let's not forget that most of her fans are teenage. They're tweens and teenagers, you know, like they're young. And, you know, they lost a lot. 22 people lost their lives. And, I mean, and even just what happened, I kept thinking about it, Stu, on that London Bridge attack, that Aussie nurse who ran back towards where the attacks were happening.
There's been two Australians.
Two Australians died, yeah. And one of them was a nurse who ran back towards where it was going on and then got stabbed by these, I mean, psychotics, basically.
Yeah.
Is the only word to describe them. And I just want to say, like, you know, yeah, we just feel I feel a lot of emotion for all that's happened, and I just wanted to open the show with saying that. But, like, let's not forget that, like, really, if we stop doing everything that we want to do, that's when they actually win. Because what they're doing is crazy and insane, but we can't let it stop us living our lives.
Yeah,
and that's the most important thing. Now, turning away from that, Stu, on to other things. In terms of Wonder Woman, obviously, we've already had our spoiler review. Should we tell people to jump forward half an hour now, Stu? No, okay. Stu's still saying no. You're going to have to tell me when.
Dave is very excited to jump forward.
I just want to jump forward in time. I want to see what the future holds. But what the present holds is 103.2 million opening weekend for Wonder Woman in the States. I was on my prediction. If you remember, Stu, I was very confident. And over 228 million worldwide. Now, this is such a justification of the Wonder Woman franchise. And Patty Jenkins has done such a fantastic job as director. She's obviously retained on the sequel. And, you know, there's just so many directions this story can go. Reportedly, the sequel will focus on Diana coming to America, but I just want to focus on that moment. I know box office isn't everything, but this film, Stu, I mean, the studio was, there were anticipations of 60 million. I was always of the mindset that this would do a lot more than 60 million. And this shows you, I think, really, frankly, a good movie combined with good marketing and good word of mouth in the instant before people went and see it. I strongly thought this was going to cruise to over 90 million, and it actually just touched over 100. Stu, your thoughts?
I think that's a kind of massive number. I don't think many people expected it to do anywhere near that well.
David Finn did.
David Finn did, but David's often got no clue.
Ha 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 ha
take what David says with a grain of salt.
Good point. Julie noticed you. Continue. I was right on this occasion.
Yeah, you were. There's broken clocks right twice a day.
Though. That's it. I was just about to say that, actually.
Yeah.
A lot of movies I predicted to have big openings haven't, but so I finally got one right.
I mean, the box office tracking for Wonder Woman before it came out, though, was all over the place. It
just going to show you, the box office tracking has no idea what they're doing.
50 at one point, and then went up to 95 when the reviews started coming out.
Yeah.
It's been all over the place. Now we've seen it, it's come out. It's done insanely well, better than most people predicted.
Yeah.
Not as well as other comic book films before.
No. Many other movies have done better business than this.
Yeah, but it's not far off. It's right up there.
And I think it'll be interesting to see in the second weekend, considering the critical praise and the audience praise, more importantly, it'll be interesting to see what the drop-off will be and will it beat Mummy in week two.
I think it will beat the Mummy in week two.
I do.
I think things like that have actually really helped it coming in, because coming in we've had a bunch of movies that kind of flopped.
Yeah, Pirates, Baywatch.
And Baywatch both underperformed massively.
Yeah.
So you were kind of coming in a lull. People were going, well, I haven't seen a movie now because I skipped those. They weren't worth watching.
And I'll say this. I think Mummy can still make decent money. The fact that if you come in with 60 or 70 million and you're number two, that's still good money for Mummy to make. I don't think Mummy will necessarily be a flop.
At the moment, they're tracking Mummy to make 35 to 40.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. How much did it cost?
I'm not sure.
I think expensive, looking at what I've seen.
That's not a flop, though. That is a decent performing movie.
Yeah, especially if it continues making money after that.
Remember, this is just the US and opening weekend.
True.
And despite years gone past, this is no longer the puzzle.
Oh, no.
It's now a very small piece in that.
Well, look at Wonder Woman. Took 103, and Stu's right, worldwide box office is hugely important and often undersold. 228 million worldwide for Wonder Woman. And I think Mummy with Tom Cruise has huge potential legs internationally, frankly.
Yeah, exactly.
I really do. I mean, I'm keen to see it.
Yeah. So,
and a lot of people are.
I think US box office is an indicator at times.
Oh, yeah.
But it really depends on, first of all, if the movie's any good.
100%.
I think that's the biggest
indicator of whether... Yeah.
You can make a lot of money in opening weekend and the movie can still be bad.
Oh, definitely. Many movies
have done that before.
Yeah.
You get to week two and three and then it just drops off.
They get 70% drop off and stuff like that, you know?
Exactly. Like Wonder Woman now with such positive reviews, it's got legs. It's going to run for weeks now.
Definitely, I agree. I think it could do very, very well for itself. Now, Stu, let's focus our minds for a second. We know that Patty Jenkins is attached. Obviously, Gal Gadot's attached. In terms of the sequel, Stu, I'm thinking, do you want to see present-day action or do you want to see World War II action? Where would you like this? Where would you like the Wonder Woman franchise to go?
So without giving any spoilers, obviously we know Wonder Woman survived from the first movie.
That's good.
Because
point.
She's in Justice League.
Yeah. Let's assume she survived the one. Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to see any more World War I, and I don't want to see World War II.
No, you want... Okay.
I think we've seen enough World War II through Captain America.
Yeah, yeah. It's been pretty mined.
It's been done.
Yeah.
I think for me, rather see either something in the present day or something set before it. A movie set on Themyscira or before that with the gods.
What, like, you mean before this movie? Like a prequel to Wonder Woman?
Yeah, that ends in Wonder Woman being created by Zeus. A movie set around the gods.
How's that Wonder Woman? I'm confused. Is it a time travel movie you're talking about?
The best part of Wonder Woman for me wasn't anywhere to do with the war. It was her on Themyscira. It was the other Amazons dealing with her.
Yeah, but...
I would rather see a complete prequel without any Wonder Woman, if it has to be.
Without any Gal Gadot at all?
Yeah. Focus on Antiope. Focus on...
Stuart, that's not going to happen.
Themyscira.
Stuart, okay. Let me...
I think that's a much better story.
Wow, Stuart. I will say this. At least you're going for something totally crazy over there. That's not going to happen, Stuart. They're not going to...
I think that's a better story.
Stuart's picture of Wonder Woman 2. First thing we lose is Wonder Woman. It's like... That's not going to happen, man. Like, I hear what you're saying.
I challenge you to name a better story.
Well,
anyone.
What you've said is interesting.
Anyone, Dave.
Okay. Stu, what you're doing is like Legends over there. You're doing like Legends of Wonder Woman.
He's thinking, but he can't.
Okay, no. I think a story with her in Nazi Germany fighting Nazis would be better than that.
You just said it was over mine.
I think it's over... No, listen, let me finish.
That's going to be the same as Wonder Woman 1. You're going to drop off.
No, I think if you want my pitch of what I would do, I would put it in the modern world. I would put it post Justice League. I would have potentially maybe I would do some sort of a team up movie. Potentially, I might have a bit of Batman in it. I would definitely set it post Justice League, and I would have Wonder Woman perhaps dealing with ancient creatures or myths out of the previous time, but she's very much in the present time. So what I'm trying to say is I would definitely do it post Justice League, so contemporary, heavy focus on Wonder Woman, perhaps exploring her myths, perhaps going back to the island at a certain point in the story.
I think it has to be.
Yeah, I've got nothing against the island.
Desperate to see more of the Themyscira.
I've got nothing against that, but I don't think you need to actually go before Wonder Woman. I think you can bring Wonder Woman into that. That's only part of the story. It doesn't need to be the whole thing. I think the concept of Wonder Woman in the present world has some really interesting ideas and directions we could go. We saw in the recent Greg Rucka that we read where it had as an ambassador, and you very much had her juxtaposed against the modern world with her kind of more ancient values.
I worry with things like that, it reads well.
Yeah, I'm not saying to do that.
Like a Phantom Menace type movie.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying to do that.
Great action scenes, but then half the movie spent looking at politics.
Yeah, no, but I mean, in the context of the movie, I would like to see her passage through the modern world. Going back to Themyscira at some point, totally open to it. Her exploring her heritage and perhaps reawakening the gods or something like that. Yes, open to that. But I think you need Gal Gadot in there, and it needs to be contemporary moving forward. And I, even though this is something we discuss in the spoiler review, but we were actually talking about where to move, I would like to see her potentially in a Batman movie or a Flash movie. I wouldn't mind a little bit of interaction with another Justice League member. Something to place her in this world to show her power over them, so that if I had her in a scene with Batman, I would have her being the dominant force, Superman.
As soon as you do that, you undermine Superman, you undermine Batman.
Whoever the character is.
They need help.
No, I'm just saying, like, even if it's just a meeting. Like, I wouldn't mind a meeting in the Fortress of Solitude, something like that. A scene piece.
Look, Marvel's done this particularly well.
Yeah.
Look at all the sequels. You don't get crossovers other than
Civil War. But dude, I don't care.
There really haven't been any crossovers.
Okay, but guess what? You asked me to pitch my movie. I'm not afraid to do it because I think it can be done well. Just because someone hasn't done it doesn't mean it can't be done.
That's true.
Thank you. The court rests.
But you could say that about using a cheese grater to remove your own face. I haven't done it. That doesn't mean it's not a great idea.
I can think of the drop of a hat in my head. I can think of so many cool scenes that I've read in comics between Batman and Wonder Woman, or even more particularly Wonder Woman and Superman. I can think of many scenes where it's done really well. And I'm just saying, you could have a scene like that just to place her in the modern world, in the modern context, without relying on them in any way and her pursuing her own agenda. Something like with her, rather than all these emails flying back and forth, something with her in the Fortress of Solitude with Batman and Superman, or just one of them talking in the Batcave with Batman, her discussing something and Bruce sort of saying, okay, I'll leave it with you. You know, like, and then she goes and has her own adventure. I would just like to, I like the feeling of, let's remember that they're the Justice League and she's a huge part of it. So let's not take that away from her. Let's show her power within the league as well. Like, and you're building towards a future where you can use them a bit more. Like, in no way am I saying Wonder Woman's the lesser of these characters. I think she's the equal of Batman and Superman in my mind. I love all these characters with passion, especially Batman and especially Wonder Woman. So I think you can do the scene. I think a good director, like a Patty Jenkins, can do the scene and make it more than just, you know, to diminish. I think it can extend and help the franchise, because I think Wonder Woman is needed to help this franchise, the DC franchise, Warner's franchise.
I think you've got to pick your battles, and I think that practically is not going to work.
Well,
could you imagine paying the fees of someone like Gal Gadot to do a 5-minute cameo and then leave?
I think it'd be well worth it.
I don't think the studio is going to see it that way.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. We've got to put it. Let's have a bet now. For the listeners, let's have a bet. Let's have a bet. None of us know what's in the Batman, do we? Stu, you don't know any details? You haven't got Matt Reeves on the speed dial over there again?
No.
Is Batfleck still not returning your calls? Because he's not returning mine. Let's have a bet. I'm going to put a little bet to you. Somewhere in the Batman with Matt Reeves, there'll be Wonder Woman appearance. An appearance, not a fucking email. An actual appearance. Do you want to have a bet now? I'm saying there will be. Are you just a $5 bet between friends. $5 for listeners.
Sure, she won't be though.
What do you mean?
We already know she's not going to be in it.
We don't know that, Stuart.
Okay, I'll take that bet, Dave.
Okay, we'll take that bet.
We'll shake hands on that, and I'll make myself $5.
And let me just say this: that includes post credits. Like post credits as well.
No, that's not part of the movie.
No, I'm talking about the whole movie. I seriously am. I'm talking about the whole thing. Just like in Suicide Squad, when Batman turned up at the very end, spoilers to anyone who hasn't watched Suicide Squad, when he gave his little speech about whatever he gave his speech about.
Well, no, but he was in the movie. He was in Suicide Squad.
No, I'm saying our bet covers even a post credits. I'm talking Wonder Woman will at some point be in there. Yes or no, Stu?
She's not going to be in the main movie anywhere.
Post credits, Stu? Come on, mate.
Potentially. What are the movies coming after it?
Well, I don't know, man. Aquaman?
If Wonder Woman is in the next two movies after it, she may be. Otherwise, she
might. I don't think it's unlikely. She might be in Aquaman.
Yeah, she's not going to be in Aquaman.
You're very confident over there.
She's not going to be in Batman.
You really feel that?
Yeah.
No Wonder Woman at all?
No.
Okay, well, we've got our bet. $5.
When is Batman set?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't think anyone knows. No one knows what he's doing. Literally, I don't think Matt Reeves has actually said, given any 100%.
Because I was under the impression it was set prior to Batman vs. Superman. And it was going to explore the whole Jason Todd dying.
What?
And it was going to be not an origin story.
Is that why you were so confident over there?
But it's going to be Batman with Robin fighting the Joker and Joker.
Well, if it is, I don't know. If it is, I don't know. I've got no idea.
And it's going to follow that whole death of Jason Todd.
Well, obviously, Affleck's told you a lot more than he's told me because he hasn't told me anything.
And if that happens, there's no way Wonder Woman's in there because they met for the first time.
Yeah, I'm aware of it, Stu. I've seen the movie, mate. No. Well, who cares, listeners? We've had a little bet here. It's something for the listeners to remember. And I'm not that confident about my $5 now, I must admit. I'm actually slightly less confident than I was 5 minutes ago. I'd be happy to keep that bet rolling, though. I'm happy to go double up into Aquaman. I fucking am quite confident.
Just keep double or nothing until it works.
At some point, yeah. Wonder Woman's got to turn up in something.
At some point. Wonder Woman 2, double or nothing. Yeah?
Yeah, Wonder Woman 2. Will she be in it? Not in your script.
I still think the gods are far more interesting than anything. All the most interesting Wonder Woman stories that I've read have had something to do with her past, looking at the Greek.
One of the most challenging things. And this
so
is
you throw her to Themyscira to face some kind of impending doom that's coming to the island.
Yeah, yeah. Some ancient
flashback.
Some ancient evil
of it.
Yeah,
exactly. You do something like that.
Be great. But
you ignore all the rest of the world.
But why couldn't
you have no Superman? You have no Batman because they can't make it to Themyscira.
You're just not fun, are you?
They can't go to Themyscira.
Men can't go to Themyscira normally. You know that? Men normally
can't
go.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
That's why they can't be in this movie. It's set in Themyscira.
Yeah, but you could still have the scene before that, though, in the Fortress of Solitude, where she's talking to Superman. She goes, I've received a call from my mother, Hippolyta. I've got to go back. I've got to leave the league.
No, because that smacks of asking permission.
Okay, that smacks of me getting $5 is what you're worried about. Okay, can you imagine this?
$5 if she doesn't do it.
No, can you imagine this? Just after he said we need to form a league. A League of Justice. After he said that, he then has a debate with Wonder Woman. She goes, I've got to go back to my homeland. No, we need you here. Like Darkseid said, yada, yada, yada. I've got to go, Batman. I live in your hands, Bruce. And he's just like, and he's just like, Batman's like slamming.
He's watching a little too much like Adam West, Batman.
He's like, go! Oh!
He's still wearing tights and like,
I told you not to go. Then he's like, can I?
So camp and
then as she takes off with the invisible jet, can I come? And she just like leaves. It's very Lego Batman.
It's very Lego Batman. Like a very camp Lego Batman.
Thank you for, that was my pitch. So, okay. Moving on. I guess we must.
Yeah. So, look, as far as Wonder Woman goes, go and see it if you haven't already.
Yes. 100%.
Dave, out of 10, what did you give it?
I gave it a 9.
Cool. I gave it an 8.
Yep.
I think we both really
high scores.
Enjoyed it.
We both really loved
high
it.
High scores.
Yeah.
Go and see it.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we've got a support review coming up.
the much anticipated spoiler review.
So jump forward half an hour now.
Yep, exactly.
If you don't want to hear any spoilers, there is a warning before we get into the spoiler.
Yeah, they'll be like, to be like that, but an actual sound effect.
And when you come back in half an hour, we'll be back to the regular.
More genius.
Yep. Dave and Stu.
Okay, so Stu, this is our spoiler review for Wonder Woman.
Yeah, so...
Final chance to exit.
Final chance to exit if you don't want to hear any spoilers.
And you should have seen it by now, kids, already.
I really recommend you go and see it.
Definitely. I definitely recommend you see it. Now, given that warning's out there, Stu, now let's turn to the movie itself, Wonder Woman. I want to hear your thoughts. I had a fantastic time at the movies. I really enjoyed myself, and I found myself so enraptured by Gal Gadot's performance and just the story beats. I mean, I was really responding... almost on cue. Like I was like a puppet in the hands of the filmmaker. I thought Patty Jenkins did a fantastic job. I mean, so my feeling during the movie was one of exhilaration, and on multiple times I was like, I felt more than anything else, before I pass over you, I felt they got the character of Wonder Woman perfectly.
Yeah.
Like it was just note for note perfect.
No, there's no argument there. I think they did Wonder Woman perfectly. Gal Gadot was amazing.
She was amazing,
in this role.
Wasn't she? She looked great, not just physically, but even the armor and stuff looked great.
Everything about that character just worked.
Yes.
I felt Chris Pine did a really good job as
well. He was very good. Yeah. No,
I was very happy with him. Being a supporting cast.
It was a well-made movie with good performances all around, and he was great. He was great as a supporting character.
The other absolute standout for me was Robin Wright as Antiope.
Yes, she's
her
very good.
Her aunt that trained her.
Yep.
I thought she was fantastic. I would love to
see
really
more of her. She really embodied what the Amazons of that island are.
Yeah.
You know?
That kind of fierce warrior nature.
Yeah, yeah.
The only kind of disappointment for me was the final battle.
Yeah.
Once David Thewlis I thought was good.
Did you pick it? Because I did. I've got to be honest. I never pick anything. I picked it.
Well, we did announce it on the show that he was Ares.
Did we?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I didn't
pick it.
Okay, no. In the film, though, I thought it was pretty obvious.
Yeah, I liked having Danny Huston's Ludendorff as kind of an obvious villain.
As a red herring. Yeah.
As the red herring.
Yep.
And then also having that...
Dr. Poison?
Dr. Poison.
Crazy.
Which I thought was really cool.
It was awesome, yeah.
But yeah, you did see David Thewlis. He was good in his role as that army sergeant.
Yep.
But then as soon as he transformed and kind of got the armor...
I just didn't feel...
It lost me a bit.
Yeah, that was the only part of the film where... I mean, I was ready to forgive the film so much because I had enjoyed so much. So it didn't worry me much, but I did think... Yeah, that's probably one part they could probably have done a little better, or maybe made him a bit more menacing. Like, I was expecting, like, a skull face for Ares or something, like...
Yeah, I don't know what they could have done. I was kind of hoping that he'd transform completely. You wouldn't see his face in there.
Almost a different person, is what I would have thought.
I would have been happy with a different cast member.
Yeah,
like, true. As a young version of him. Maybe he did.
Transform
kind of thing.
That said, I agree with you.
I think it's a very minor...
But it was very minor. Even in the context of the movie, it felt minor.
Unfortunately, it kind of left you on a down note after such a solid movie.
Sure.
I think if they'd changed the final battle...
You thought that was the one area.
10 out of 10, easily.
Now, a lot of superhero movies suffer from the big bad they have to fight at the end. A lot of good superhero movies definitely fail at that. I didn't feel this failed. There were bits of it I liked. I liked in the battle how... Am I right in saying this? Because she seemed to absorb some of his godly power. So she grew stronger in defeating him. Am I right in saying that? She seemed to.
I don't think
in the
she
gauntlets?
Got stronger. I think she kind of realized her own power more.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. She sort of dug into her power levels more.
It's kind of like when she first jumped across that crevice to get the God-killer sword.
Got it.
And she realized that she could put her hand through stone for the first time.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you're in your 20s to 30s. How have you not realized you're this strong before now?
Well, she'd never been tested.
Yeah, exactly. She'd been in battle, practice.
Yeah, true, true.
So it's kind of surprising that she didn't know her own strength.
But, I mean, tested to the ultimate limit. She in battle she was sort of like, even when she had that first battle where she blocks with her hand and the gauntlets go out, that was the first time it happened because it was the first time she sort of needed it.
Yeah.
Really interesting movie in a lot of ways, and I thought that the filmmaker Patty Jenkins, who I didn't realize hadn't directed a film since Monster, which won an Academy Award. That was an insanely good movie. Just my own ignorance hadn't realized that she. I don't know how she hasn't directed this. That's sexism in Hollywood. Like, she directed Monster, which was a really hard-hitting good movie, won an Oscar for Charlize Theron, fantastic performance. How are we not directing more movies since then? I mean, that was like 14 years ago.
Yeah.
I know Thor fell apart, but that's only one movie in 14 years. So that's a damning indictment on the Hollywood system.
It is, especially now when everyone's calling for her to do a sequel and do follow-ups.
Well, thankfully she's locked in. I think we all know that. When they signed, they would have signed her for 2 or 3.
Oh, well, now especially, they're trying to push her.
Yeah.
They're trying to push the schedule up as well.
I'm down for it. Like,
because if you look at the DC slate at the moment, there's a bunch of movies like Batman and the Flash that just Batman keep falling
year.
Through.
Yeah, but Batman's next year. We know that. Matt Reeves is working on it now. We know, and Aquaman is moving forward without any hassles, apparently. Like, ooh, they're well into it.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if one of them got pushed back and Wonder Woman 2 took its place.
I would think if any of... It's not going to be Aquaman. Aquaman's apparently traveling without any problems. I was reading about it today. If Batman could potentially slide back a little bit further. They haven't started filming.
Exactly. I think Batman and The Flash are both in trouble of making... The
Flash is in limbo.
They're both in serious trouble of making their due date that's on the slate.
Do you think... good point.
And it's not unheard of. Like, no. Marvel did the same thing with Inhumans.
Yeah.
They wiped it from the slate and moved a Black Panther in there, I think.
And it became a TV show in the end.
Well, yeah, they wiped it from the movies and then went, well, let's use the property, we've got it. So.
Yeah. No, and it wouldn't be a tragedy. Look, I mean, this movie left me so pumped for the franchise. It reinvigorated, gave me hope. It made me realize just how good she is. Wonder Woman, to me, has always been such an asset in every incarnation of Justice League, all the way back to Super Friends. Like, she was always there, so solid, so important. Now in a live-action franchise, finally she's getting her due.
Yeah.
And I left thinking, roll on Justice League and roll on Wonder Woman too, you know?
Yeah, well, I honestly think now they need to kind of center this universe around her. In the same way that Marvel's done Iron Man, him being the most popular, Wonder Woman is by far the most well-received movie so far.
Sure.
And I think she's the best character.
That's a certain realism makes me think it's inevitable. I mean, Batman's going to be there as well. Batman and Wonder Woman, I think, could be the linchpins of this whole thing.
True, but I would like to see her play a much larger role.
Oh, me too, yeah.
In things like...
I want to see Wonder Woman in Batman. Michelle was saying that. She's going, she liked how, like, my girlfriend went and saw it, and she's like, I liked, because I said to her, what did you think about it just being Wonder Woman? She goes, no, I loved it, because there was no one to divert her star power in this movie. She goes, I would rather see Wonder Woman turn up in some of their movies as well, which I would like as well. So in, say, Man of Steel 2 or Batman, Wonder Woman make an appearance as well, like you say, bringing her star power and her positivity and just her force and her fan power into these movies to sort of brighten up Batman a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love that to see it happen.
Yeah, I'm just thinking. I just putting ideas out there.
Going to be able to fork out the money required to get someone like Gal Gadot to do cameos at this
point. Dude, I think money talks. Gal Gadot, I love her. She's only done Fast and the Furious, not much Keeping Up with the Joneses. She hasn't done a ton of work. I'd say she's contracted to hardcore to DC, like to Warner's.
Yeah, I doubt that she's cheap, though. She's going
not
to be
cheap,
damn
but
expensive.
No one's cheap, man. Affleck's not cheap. Like, they've got money. They've got money.
No, but when you look at other cameos you see in these other movies, they're not going for the big A-list stars.
You're talking like
you don't get cameos with Batfleck.
Yeah,
but you get a cameo with someone like Sam Jackson, who will literally do anything
sure,
in front of him.
But he's well paid for it. Sam Jackson's
he's
not
well
cheap.
He's well paid, but he's by nowhere near anywhere.
He's available.
In the same league as these other guys.
Still, I think Warner's would be paying attention to this. This movie, unlike the previous two, which have made money, like Suicide Squad, let's remember, exceeded expectations financially, was very divisive critically. Batman vs. Superman underperformed to their expectations, and yet it was divisive as well. This is not divisive. It's got a 93-94% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't want to... We'll save box office for our later discussion, but I just feel that Gal Gadot is an asset now. And Wonder Woman's an asset. Putting her in the Batman in some role with Bruce Wayne. I'm not saying a romance. I'm just saying like a friendship to really build the identity of the league. I just feel like there's real big potential. And you can't tell me that maybe some of these scenes Joss Whedon shooting now aren't Wonder Woman related as well.
I mean, yeah, I think that's likely when you're patching up Justice League, I think.
Apparently he's shooting all through the summer. I was reading it today. He's shooting all through the summer doing this.
It wouldn't surprise me at all that Gal Gadot's involved in that.
Oh, she will
heavily.
Be. Yeah.
But as far as her appearing in other movies, I think they've got to be careful.
Sure.
she's such an icon now and she's such a strong female character.
Yeah.
You don't want to use her in a way that cheapens that.
Oh, and yeah,
that's
but...
what's going to happen if you start using her cheaply in cameos.
I suppose so, but I just feel like part of the appeal of Wonder Woman always has been, like, think of it this way. Where you would normally have put Superman, you could put Wonder Woman. She fulfills the same role as your classic Superman from, like, the 60s and 70s, that classic good all-American boy, not Mr. Depressed Superman that we've got in the current franchise.
Yeah, yeah.
She really can play that role. Like, she's quite interchangeable in a lot of ways, and I just feel this is a... Like, there's a whole audience now of that have come and watched this movie who are so pumped for it, and the movie left you, like every good show, wanting more, didn't it? Like, you were left wanting more. I wanted the next adventure straight away. At the end of this Wonder Woman film.
Yeah, although we did get the whole tie-in with the emails that we thought was going to happen.
You did predict it. Well done.
Picked that pretty early.
Well done, mate. You predicted it in the cinema at the start of the movie. As she checked the email, I've gone, point to Stu. And then at the end, I've gone, add another point to Stu.
Yeah, yeah. Just checking the email.
Because it wasn't Affleck turning up with, like, hey, it was just, dear Diana. No, it really was, dear Diana.
Dear Diana. And then she was like, dear Bruce, thank you.
And I was like, did Stu have a role in scripting this? Like, yeah. Was Susie involved at some level?
Warner Brothers is definitely listening in.
They are listening in.
Yeah.
But, like, just turning to other parts of the film that I really enjoyed, they were really clever, very clever to set this so far before contemporary times, because they didn't have to worry about Batman popping in, Superman popping in. The light was solely on her. And putting it in World War One. I felt, which is such a dreary time period, and, you know, it's called the Great War for a reason, so many lives were lost. Having her in, she became kind of this bright light in such a dark, like, you know, time. Like, it really, you're really left thinking, like, the war was so terrible, and, like, when she was in No Man's Land and stuff, it's such desolation. But when she came out of that, and she's like, I'm not going to stop, I'm going to go forward, it really, she brought such hope. You know, like, you know...
I mean, yeah, but that's true of every comic book character, though.
I know, but I felt the
that's
scenes...
That's the point of every comic book
character. I get it. I know, but they don't always convey so well in the movies. I thought this movie captured it perfectly. That's what I'm saying. I thought, like, this was a really good example of how to capture the basic beats of a comic book movie. I don't think it was doing anything revolutionising the genre. I felt like this was almost, let's go back to formula. But they did it in such a great way with a female character. I think they did do it a little bit differently. I think it did make a difference at being female. And the way she didn't need help. Like, that's what I kept thinking. Like,
yeah, and that's the problem with the whole cameo thing. You can't bring her in and have her drop in and help.
You don't want that?
No.
But Wonder Woman does help.
It needs to be her coming in to save someone less experienced.
Sure.
Someone, say, like a young Ezra Miller Flash.
Yeah.
She flies in and helps him out, and then
that's what I mean.
Flies off again.
That's what I mean. That's what
Batman
I mean.
Batman and Superman, it's never going to happen. Their egos are too big. They wouldn't let Wonder Woman come in and help them out if they didn't absolutely need it.
Well, Superman...
And
look,
if they needed it, they'd call everyone.
It depends. Look, it depends, dude. Like, I've read comics of Superman often where he's called Wonder Woman for help. Often. There's many a comic where he's done that. Like, Wonder Woman is actually a friend. Like, in history I'm talking about, Wonder Woman has always been a friend to both those characters. So with Superman, I can think of many issues where they've come in. They've never had, like... Okay, there have been relations more recently, but generally it's a friendship, and it's almost like professional. And with Batman, the same thing, but less of it.
I think at the moment, the state of the DCU,
sure.
you run the risk of that looking sexist. You run the risk of it looking
really
demeaning.
What's sexist about bringing her in to help? Like when she's the one saving him.
When she's the one saving, if he's calling her,
yeah,
that's okay.
That's what I'm talking about.
I think it's more likely they're going to have it the other way around, that they're going to come in and save her.
Oh, no, that's what I don't want.
That's what I don't want.
That's exactly, sorry if I haven't been clear, that's what I was talking about with Michelle. She was saying I would rather see her coming in to their movies than them coming in to her movie. Do you get what I'm getting?
But if you're going to do that, she then automatically becomes the center of this universe. You can't have Batman assuming some kind of authoritative role if she's pulling his ass out of the fire.
True. Maybe it's called in.
At that point, you lose all authority.
Maybe it's this, though. I don't know. We're speculating. We're not sitting there. I'm saying, like, could it... I'm picturing a scene like this in the Batcave. I'm picturing her coming in for almost a brainstorming session, and then turning up for a fight a bit later. Like, not a huge role, but I want to get her in. You know what I mean? I want to get her in. I want the audience breathing in some Wonder Woman fumes while they're ingesting Batman, because we have had so much Batman, and he's such a cool character. Well, let's let Wonder Woman also pollinate across that movie as well. I'm just putting it out there as a general idea more than anything else.
Look, I like the idea in theory.
Yeah.
But I also think there's a very good reason Marvel hasn't done that.
Mm.
You need a movie to kind of focus on that character.
I get you. I hear you. But these big movies do that go on for so long.
Superman appearing in Wonder Woman movie?
I could, yeah.
You could see it.
I could imagine it. Work. Yeah.
But it would also take screen time away from the characters that we want.
Yeah, but I think so. I actually...
We left this movie thinking we need more Wonder Woman, right?
Oh, I love this movie.
Would you want to cut out 20 minutes of Wonder Woman?
No.
Another character that you...
But in Wonder Woman 2, I wouldn't mind potentially having someone... I thought you made a good idea with The Flash, her having sort of like a mentor role with The Flash, for example.
I think that's one of the only ways it works. Yeah. And I think The Flash and Cyborg... the only two characters at the moment that would receive that help well.
Sorry, excuse me for laughing, but is there a movie I'm less looking forward to than Cyborg? I mean, is anyone looking forward to this movie? Like, I mean, if you said to me they're doing a Teen Titans movie, I'm no huge Teen Titans fan, but even then I'd be like, that's more interesting than Cyborg Solo. Cyborg Solo feels like a prison sentence. Like, he's done nothing interesting ever.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, again, I'm going to stick with the hopeful side and say,
yeah,
we said the exact same thing about Guardians of the Galaxy when they first announced that.
But at least Guardians of the Galaxy was Guardians, plural. Like, it had more than one. Cyborg is just
true,
just
but it was
Cyborg.
A nothing team no one had heard of. You couldn't true. Name a Guardian to save your life.
But I think Cyborg, if I'm going to be honest, I don't really think it's going to happen. I don't think we'll really see Cyborg. I think what we'll see is Cyborg and his amazing friends, Cyborg in another movie, Cyborg possibly in Flash. You know what I mean? I think he'll be one of those movies that turns into he's part of something else, whether that's Justice League continuing or whether he turns up more in Flash. I mean, that would make more sense. I think what I'm basically saying is I don't think Cyborg has enough about Cyborg to really demand a whole film.
No, but I think if you've got a character that's like Cyborg, you use it to test the genre. You would look at an espionage spy thriller, and you wouldn't have him playing the superhero Cyborg. You have him playing some enhanced spy.
I suppose so. What is he... yeah, I hear what you're saying.
You mix it up. You don't go for your classic comic book movie, because it's not going to work.
No. What has he been in so far? Like, has Cyborg... Remind me... Has he had any scenes yet, other than just the quick cut scene in Batman Superman? Has he had actually...
We saw the brief origin where the Mother Box kind of gave him life.
Oh, you know what I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of the scene from the trailer. He's had some scenes in the Justice League
there's
trailer.
There's been a bunch of Justice League
That's what I'm
trailer
thinking
scenes
of.
Where he kind of flies through the sky and...
Yeah. Look, I mean, I agree with you. I think you make a good point. Like, you try to do a sort of different genre film, like a spy movie or something with it. It just happens to be Cyborg. That would be cool.
Yeah, massively. You do something completely out of
the box. Do you not think we could just see, like, the darker version of Iron Man they try to go for? That's what I feel is more likely.
I feel like they're trying to. Like,
that's what I feel like it will be.
When you look at the trailers
for
him, you see Iron Man over and over again.
You see the Iron Man motif. I mean, if you were just a kid, I would imagine, is that Iron Man? Like, why is Iron Man black now? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's...
Yeah, I feel like they're better off looking towards Ben Affleck. Definitely. To kind of take up the Iron Man role. I think that's a much closer...
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, I just don't see... Look, I mean, we're getting off track, but I just don't see Cyborg in any real way being a huge fact here. I think of him as a team player, you know? And that's no insult to the actor. I mean, purely the character. We haven't seen Justice League yet. I guess at the end of Justice League, we can sit down and then we'll have more idea of what they're trying to go for.
Yeah.
It's very hard for us to predict based on what we've seen of Cyborg.
I mean, yeah, we would have said the same thing about Black Widow or Hawkeye before Avengers, but now everyone was calling out for
Hawkeye would have been a nothing, a zero. Like, I knew who Black Widow was, at least. Yeah. Hawkeye to me was, he was nothing, not even a blip on my radar.
For me, it was the other way around. Hawkeye was, I knew Hawkeye more than I did.
Okay.
Black Widow.
I knew Black Widow from some comics here and there, man. I was kind of like, she's cool, she's a spy. Like, you sort of like, she's got potential, but it could be nothing, you know, but it turned out well.
Yeah.
They cast Scarlett Johansson. That turned out very well. So Stu, just before we go into, like, you know, the show proper, like, I just want to really, so to recap, I mean, there's so much in Wonder Woman to enjoy. I'm giving it as a movie. It's not perfect, but a movie doesn't need to be perfect to really be so enjoyable. I mean, I'm giving it 9, and that's 9 really well deserved points. And like, openly in the movie, I was emotional, but also my mouth was open. I was just I felt like I was just like breathing in just the pure essence of Wonder Woman that I've been waiting for so long. It felt like the first time since the 70s show, which I grew up on in the 80s. Like, I loved Wonder Woman from then when I was a kid. And it felt like she's come back. This is Wonder Woman. She's in the modern age. Thank God. You know?
Yeah.
That's how
I mean, I've got it down as an 8, I think. Sure. The final battle lost me a bit.
Sure.
And some of those sidekicks throughout World War One.
Yeah, I agree. They're not perfect. Grating. Yeah, I agree. They're almost not worth speaking of, really. They're just that throwaway.
No, I mean, 3 sidekicks, one of which was just pretty racist.
Which one? The
Indian, the Native American.
Yeah, he was cliched, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
It was almost too many sidekicks, considering they did so little. Like, they were like, hey, I'm, you know, whoever, and I'm this guy, and I'm that guy. And, like, the only one who was helpful was the guy who was Middle Eastern or whatever he was.
Yeah, the translator.
He was helpful. He was a good performance, I thought. Like,
yeah, but they were all overacting to the point of ridiculousness.
I mean, the guy with the gun was just killing me. He didn't do anything.
No, I mean, you could have removed those 3 guys from the story and just put in 3 random soldiers.
Yeah. But that said, they were basically flies. They were nothing, really, in the grand scheme of things. Considering Chris Pine was there. Chris Pine was very good. I've been critical of Chris Pine at times in his career. I think I did call him a beautiful shell at one point, didn't I, Stu?
Sounds familiar, yeah.
I've got to say, I really was impressed.
I'm glad you're turning around. He's a good actor.
I've always felt he's incredibly good looking. And I enjoyed Star Trek 1. The thing is, I haven't really enjoyed the Star Trek movies, and it's not really his fault. I just haven't really got into any of them other than the first one. But I want to give the third one a chance because I fell asleep in it, and that's often not the movie's fault. That's often my fault for being tired. So I want to watch Star Trek 3 again to see if it's any good or not. But I thought he gave a really good performance. He really knew how not to hog the spotlight and how to share the spotlight and how to give the moment to Wonder Woman, to Gal Gadot.
Yeah, I also liked his comic timing as well.
Yeah, he's always had a light touch. I like that about him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's always had a light touch. That I've always liked about Chris Pine, actually. I've always felt he looks quite capable of doing comedy.
Yeah, so especially like the early scenes when he's in the caves bathing after he's crashed his plane.
Yeah, it was funny, yeah.
That was great. I really enjoyed those kind of moments.
Did you like the sense with this Wonder Woman, because she was so young, literally in terms of like her, she hadn't had a lot of interaction with anyone other than the Themyscirians, the Amazons. There was a certain naivete to her. Did you enjoy that? I sort of felt like at other times that would annoy me, but I actually liked it in this movie because she was right at the beginning of her relationship with Man's World.
Yes and no. I think it was great at times.
Sure.
But then I think they overplayed it.
Maybe a little bit.
She couldn't walk through a door while holding a sword.
Odd scene.
Yeah, I was a little bit like, really? Like, she can figure out how to walk through a door.
That was a comedy scene that felt a bit clunky.
It really did.
Yeah, yeah.
I felt flat.
But no, I didn't think that wasn't one of the strongest scenes.
No, but when she's dealing with men and dealing with soldiers and saying things innocently that they all realise were kind of weird to say, that felt good. That felt like the character should.
And part of this is the word I used when I came out of it. There was such purity to her character, both in obviously how it was done and in the performance. So how it was written and how it was performed. Did you not feel like with how Gal Gadot was doing it, it was very pure? Like it really felt like she really captured to me the essence of Wonder Woman. Like when she went over that battle into that battle, and the way she just had constantly like, no, we're doing it. You know, like we're not stopping. We're not backing down. We're going forward. Like, there was that real sense of her. And I thought, that's to me, I like that good old-fashioned kind of, like, it's more than patriotism. It's a bit more of a call to humanity, you know?
Yeah, I think the problem was because they overhit that I'm naive move, it felt like she just didn't understand what she was walking into, as opposed to bravery.
Yeah,
which true. I think was a better...
But she is brave.
Well, we know she's brave.
Yeah.
We know that she would have done that knowing the guns were there anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
But because they'd overplayed that hand of she doesn't know what she's doing.
What am I doing in this world sort of thing.
Yeah, when they say you can't go out there and she goes, I'm going to do it anyway.
Sure.
You got the feeling that she was kind of playing the dumb blonde kind of, well, these silly men don't know what they're talking about kind of thing, as opposed to, I know the danger's out there, but I need to weather this storm to...
But I think the scene grew very serious very quickly, and she did understand. Like, the scene was done well.
But you kind of lost a lot of...
I know what you mean. The initial moment you felt. See, it got me. It hooked me completely, that scene. I fell in love with that scene. I liked that she rescued that village, and then when she came back and it was gone and stuff. Like, I felt like you
knew...
Oh,
yeah, there were a lot of great scenes, like, where she's very playing emotional. The heroic feminine role, but... Every now and again, they missed a beat, and then you lost something in the next scene.
But, yeah, I hear what you're saying. That's what I'm saying. I don't think it was perfect.
Like when she comes into London and says, it's hideous, that's perfect.
That's great.
That's her saying it like it is, not realizing that this is what the rest of the world actually looks like.
Yeah, it is polluted.
And she's grown
crap.
Up in paradise. Like,
yeah, good points, Stu.
So that worked really well. But then, you know, you see her... clumsily walking around, ripping dresses, walking into doors.
I did like the scene with her picking her costume, though. I thought that was pretty cool. The scene, you know, where she's picking the dresses and she came out with the hat on and stuff. I enjoyed that. Like, it's a bit light, but, you know. There was you've got to have a light touch to it, Stu. Like, she is a girl, basically, you know, like, and she's not really aware of gender roles and stuff like that. So she's being forced into that. Because that's the time period. I mean, it opens itself up
but
for a scene
exactly
like that.
Right. That's exactly my point. Why would she choose 100 dresses if she had no idea of the gender stereotypes or any of this?
Well, I don't
know. She would pick something that's functional.
But wasn't her friend suggesting... Her friend was suggesting stuff, though.
No, her friend, the Pine's assistant, was saying, I'm so over this, she needs to pick something and go.
I don't know. I think you're being a little bit critical, though, I think. Like, I thought it was a well-done scene. I didn't think it needed to be...
A character trait and stick with it. They were flip-flopping between the naive, dumb girl and the warrior princess.
But Wonder Woman is both. Like, Wonder Woman isn't just one thing. Like, Wonder Woman does encompass... She is feminine as well.
She's naive and culture only.
Yeah. Well...
She's not this child that's put in a woman's body. She's...
No. She's a mature lady.
She knows how to deal with people. She knows how to dress herself. It's not...
Yeah, but she's not familiar with the social mores of the outside world at all. Like, she was wearing her, like, Themyscirian warrior's outfit, basically.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
So then she puts on one dress and goes, how do you fight? Can't do it. What's the next thing you do?
But I just think it's a lighter scene, man. It's a comedic scene. But that's what it was. It was a softer comedic scene.
It was meant to be, and it just didn't work.
Didn't like it?
They completely lost me in those kind of scenes.
Okay, fair enough. But I think...
When she's fascinated by snow, when she's dancing with Chris Pine, that was how you play her as naive.
Sure.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
That's something she would have no concept of, living in this tropical island kind of paradise.
I hear what you're saying. Point made. Something I did read online, I didn't read the article, was apparently there was... Look, I know it's got 94% of Rotten Tomatoes, and overall people, even you're over there crucifying a scene, but you've enjoyed the movie. I've loved the movie. That's the general consensus. Apparently there were some people online, like some feminists and stuff, who didn't like it. I don't know what they were complaining about. I didn't read the article, but apparently there was some backlash amongst some of these groups. God knows what
they're doing. I mean, realistically, you're going to get backlash.
Yeah, I know.
Any group,
like, come on. What do you want her to do? Like, you know, she's her own woman. She's empowered. She's very compassionate. And they're not just playing the sort of, like, take no prisoners, hard-ass, strong female who doesn't have feelings. She had feelings. Like, it was directed by a woman. I thought very well directed, frankly. I think Patty Jenkins did a really good job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it a fool's diamond? No. But, my God, it's...
I think the biggest problem is not her directing. It's the writing that...
Yeah, I get you. But
if you look at the writing team, it's three white guys, middle-aged white men.
Yeah.
I mean, put a woman on that panel somewhere.
There should be a woman.
Some kind of female writer.
There should be
a
female writer on a Wonder Woman movie. I definitely agree. Got at least a fucking, definitely in the writer's room.
I mean, Zack Snyder was listed as a writer.
Yeah, I know.
That's not a great sign for movie strength.
No, I know. No, there definitely should have been for a movie like that. I don't know what else to say about it. I forget what I was going to say, Stuart. It was sort of countering to your point. Oh, no, it was that. I wondered what they're complaining about, but I guess they're going to complain about anything. You can't please everyone these days. Especially the super, you know, you know, when you get into like the people who are just like, well, all super, they basically boils down to, well, all superhero movies suck anyway. And you're like, well, okay, thanks for that then. Just move along. There was a guy on the Serious Issues forums recently who was just tearing into a Wonder Woman and just every superhero movie going, he called everyone who liked them, what did he say? Myopic Philistines. And I said, you can call me a Philistine, but do I have to be myopic as well? It's just like, mate, why don't you just choose another forum? Like, you're on a comic book forum talking about comic book movies. Like, don't tear apart people who enjoy comic book movies on the comic book movie forum. Like, they're there for a reason. You know,
people like that just want a reaction.
They just want a fight.
Exactly.
They've woken up mad. People like that just want to watch the world burn. So, Stu, I think that covers it for our spoiler review. I mean, honestly, if you haven't seen the movie yet, and I know some people who haven't, I know some people have been on the fence because they haven't enjoyed previous DC movies. This is a damn sight better than the previous two or three, even if you're a Glue Man of Steel, which is often praised. I found it very boring. This is a lot more exciting than Man of Steel. It's a really good movie, just as a film. Honestly, go out, take your partner or take yourself and go out, watch it, enjoy it. And just embrace the fact that Wonder Woman is here and she's hugely relevant and hugely powerful in 2017. So, Stu, that was fantastic. Now, the first thing I want to say coming off that spoiler review is Screen Rant I read was a report that Justice League is weighing in at 170 minutes. That's just 10 minutes shy of 3 hours.
I don't mind that. That's fine.
No, yeah, I like. Thank you. I'm so pleased you said it because I like that too. I'm like, sweet. A lot of content.
I think, to be honest, if they get the pacing right, they could make it 3.5 and people wouldn't complain.
Yeah. Now, can I also say this, though? That's great that they're saying it's 170 minutes. Joss Whedon shooting scenes, how have they possibly got an accurate end time? If he's shooting scenes, like the other day, Transformers, whatever the next Transformers number is, was predicted to be like 3.5 hours or something, and Michael Bay came out and said, "Yeah, it's not. You got that completely wrong, guys." Like how could like if you know that Joss Whedon's cutting scenes, they're obviously going to have to be edited into the movie. How can you possibly get an accurate runtime when the scenes are still being shot?
I mean, we don't know the extent of these new scenes being shot.
Yeah.
They may just be reshoots where the sound wasn't quite right, or they needed to.
But there's scenes that he, no, there new scenes. There's new scenes. There's new scenes he's written. They're completely fresh scenes. The Zack Snyder never actually.
Yeah, but if they're replacing shot. Scenes they already had, they would want to keep it to a similar time frame.
Okay, so look, 170. I've got no problems.
I don't know how accurate this is going to be.
I'm going to have my big Coke. I'm going to have popcorn. I'm going to be loving life. Is it November?
Justice League's, yeah, end of this year, November.
Roll it on, man. Roll it on. It's worth living for, isn't it? Like I'll hang around on this planet for a bit longer.
This year's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
Thor Ragnarok.
I was going to say, this is coming into
Justice League, and then we've got Star Wars.
Yeah, it's just like, we're hitting winners.
Oh, man.
Like, finally, studios have realised that this is what we've wanted all our lives. Like, they're finally woken up.
Big, dumb blockbusters.
Yeah, we just want blockbusters. Like, this might surprise you. Back when I was in uni, I went through a phase where I liked sort of what I considered arty movies, which, like, I like Woody Allen and stuff, but I tried to get a little bit more experimental. That didn't last. I think I saw...
Dr. Dave didn't survive?
Didn't survive. Didn't come out of the 90s, my friend. He died a death in about 94.
A lot of things died in the 90s.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Went the way of Kurt Cobain, did it?
Oh, it's dark, yeah. It wasn't quite as dramatic. Shotgun in the mouth. Jesus Christ, Kurt. Like, really? Like, now, Stu, I mean, I don't mean to laugh, but I mean, honestly, like, come on, like, take yourself a bit seriously.
Too soon.
Yes, like 20 years later. Someone out there is just still crying about it. Chris Cornell went recently, though, in a rather surprising twist, because I was a big Chris Cornell fan from Audioslave Soundgarden.
Soundgarden.
Yeah, I was dug him heavily. I was quite surprised. Really quite sad, actually.
Yeah,
like,
a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago. Now, that's too soon. You're not going to hear me making cracks about that. Like, you know, I'll defend his right. Like, but he had a lot of prescription drugs in his system. He had a stack of prescription drugs in his system. He was taking all sorts. It's reminded me of myself.
Kind of saying, not. Kind of reminds me of like the Michael Jackson kind of scenario.
Oh, yeah. He was.
Where there are a lot of prescription drugs mixed up. And
yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean, we still don't know the...
I think Michael Jackson was in worse shape, even.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. We don't know what happened to either of them, really.
No, no. It's sad. It's sad, really, honestly. Because to our eyes, they've got so much to live for. Like especially Chris Cornell. Like, Michael Jackson had real problems. But Chris Cornell, like, you would have thought, like, well, this guy's living the dream.
Yeah.
Like, really, he seemed pretty together. Beautiful wife, beautiful family. I doubt
this was intentional.
I don't know. He hung himself, dude. Like, how is that not intentional?
It was a drug overdose, wasn't it?
No, he hung himself, dude, with a band on the hotel door. He just had a lot of drugs in his system, prescription drugs. Yeah, he with a belt, hung himself. Yeah, that's how he died. Yeah, it was hardcore, man. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's not intentional. So, yeah, sorry to break the news to you over there, Stu. I mean, a signal of doom, that is quite the doom signal. Look, sometimes, guys, it's going to get a little dark when we take us a long way into the swamp with Stu and myself. I can't all just be comedy, gold.
True. How did you start this episode, Dave?
Yeah, I was talking about light and love, Stu.
Yeah,
yeah. You know,
this channel is...
There's a lot of emotions over here.
Inherently light-hearted.
Yeah. We try. Now, Stu...
Failed miserably.
I'm going to... Yeah, we try. It doesn't mean we succeed.
It does work.
Hey, guess what? We didn't solve world peace this week.
We
didn't solve the Middle East crisis this week. What a fucking surprise.
Yeah.
You know, like, millions have tried. We'll give it a best shot.
We'll put that on next week.
Can't you just all get along? Just let the phone down. Apparently not. Stu, Supernova have upped their game. And I've got a bit of an editorial here, but they've upped their game. And Aussie Chris Thor Hemsworth is coming to Sydney Supernova, Stu. This is happening. This is actually important for listeners. If your listeners here in Australia, or potentially New Zealand, or somewhere close, you want to get to Sydney quickly. Not this Sunday, but I believe it's June 18, so Sunday week. Chris Hemsworth, Thor himself, is coming to Sydney Supernova, and he's going to be doing signings. He's going to be doing photos. $210 for a photo, Stu.
I know. $200 expensive, isn't it?
It's very expensive for a photo.
It's Thor, but.
And look, I read the rules. In one photo, you can have maximum two people. So two girls or something could have a photo with Chris Hemsworth, and they could split, obviously, the cost.
That's still a lot.
I know. I'm just giving it out there for listeners so they know, because there will be some listeners out there who it will be money well spent. I mean, he's got a huge fan base. He is Thor. But $200 for an autograph, Stu, and that autograph is just a headshot. That's where I got sucked into the David Carradine trap. You know, and what do you do with that headshot, really? I mean, honestly.
You can take things up to him.
Regret. I don't know if you can. Well, I know with Carradine it was all like the headshots.
There are rules about appropriateness kind of thing. You can't take up any random thing.
Sure.
Just but if you were to take up a picture of Thor,
he'll sign
or like a poster of Thor or something.
Oh, okay, right, okay.
They were willing to sign
it. But that's cool. If you had like a cool poster, like a movie poster.
So like a limited edition or a movie poster of Thor that you want signed. That's the kind of thing they're willing to do.
And to me, I'm like, honestly, I'm saying these kids are paying $200 a pop. Let him sign fucking whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, seriously, they've got to pay the money. Now, Stu, that's only one announcement. I've got a bit more editorialising on the price, but also announced, because I want to do the Supernova justice, Stephen Yuen, Glenn from Walking Dead.
Yeah, Stephen Yuen, that's...
Yeah. He's got his fans.
Been on the latest season.
Yeah.
There's no spoilers.
Always, no spoilers, guys. Like
you're about a year out if you haven't realized.
Yeah, Glenn from Walking Dead. I always liked him. He was one of my favorite characters. He was an important part of the franchise. He bought it heavily. Ricky Whittle of American Gods, Shadow Moon.
Yeah, so a bit of modern TV. Personality there.
And Stu, something I'm looking very forward to. Terry Hatcher will appear alongside Dean Cain in the dual panel on the Saturday, and both of them will be there in attendance. Two powerhouses from the 90s who were in Lois and Clark, Stu, and are since now both in Supergirl. And Dean Cain also had a role in Smallville, I believe. Are you talking to a real hardcore Dean Cain fan? And Stu, I might be spending $50 and getting a photo with him.
Yeah, okay. You can do that. I will not be joining you for that one.
Yeah, you won't be doing the duet photo, Stu?
No, I'm not going to.
I don't really want
with you and split a cost.
I don't want to. You don't want to kick in 25 to this adventure?
Yeah, we can both kiss him on each side of the cheek.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Don't hog the moment for me, Stu, if I might press a little too close to him, you know? I'm a big Dean Cain from way back, and I just want to say to him, love Lois and Clark, you were great. My favourite Superman, easily. Like, you're always Superman to me, Dean. Something like that. But, Stu, in terms of, like, there was a bit of kerfuffle, I noticed on a few pages, about the price that Chris Hemsworth is charging, the $210 and the $200. Now, this reminds me of Tom Petty's song where he says, "The boys upstairs want to see how much you'll pay for what you used to get for free." That's on a Tom Petty song where he's talking about the music industry. And I do think, like, frankly, I like Chris Hemsworth, so he shouldn't take this person because I'm sure he's not setting the price himself. I do think this is price gouging. And let's not forget, it's the fans who put these people on a pedestal. And I'm reminded, I know people will pay it. When Elton John and Barbra Streisand play in Vegas, you can get tickets for in excess of $2,000 for them to play. When Barbra Streisand was playing some concerts, some of the cheapest tickets were close to $1,000. Now, you and me are going, who the fuck would pay that? People do pay it, but they're going for a high-rolling audience, man. Like, people who go to Vegas and pay those kind of things, they've got the money to spend. They're some of the whales of the world. I don't know if the same applies to Supernova Sydney and some of the kids who are turning up for Chris Hemsworth. Stu, your thoughts?
It's an exorbitant price.
It is. It's up there.
It's not proportional with his level of fame for me, anyway.
Sure.
I didn't spend... I spent half that much to meet Stan Lee.
Exactly. And to meet Stan...
At the same convention a couple of years earlier.
Yes, thank you.
So, I mean, I would expect to pay maybe $100 to see him.
Yeah, I think $100 is fair.
I think that's a reasonable price. Anywhere from $50 to $100 for an autograph.
In the region.
I think is a reasonable price for a big star of today.
$200 is screaming opportunism.
$200 to me is that's a lot of money.
I think it's a lot. Like, I'm a bit like, that's leaving a taste in my mouth, frankly. Don't worry, kids. I'm far too cheap to pay that. I'm not going to pay that. My $50 to Dean Cain, even that's, you know, I'm like looking at long range projections to justify that. But
I mean, I'm really hoping that they're going to adjust it in the week to come before
imagine if you're
because of the back, they might drop it to maybe $150 or something.
Imagine if you're a mother and you've got two teenage girls who are besotted with Chris Hemsworth.
Better hope they're okay being in the same photograph.
I'd be like, ladies, you're getting in the same photo. You're getting in the same photo. Huddle up, girls.
It's that, or you get birthdays this year.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like, I mean, to me, it's not an option. And like, brother, sister. Oh, but I like Thor. He's my pal, and she's like my loving son. I don't care. Two different reasons, same photo.
Yeah.
You know, side to side. It's going to be an arm over each.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's double what I would be comfortable spending on pretty much any celebrity.
Yeah, I can't think of anyone. I mean, I like Chris Hemsworth as much as... Look, the only one I can think of is RDJ. That's, to me, he's the only one higher than Thor. And even him, I'm not spending $200. I love RDJ, you know?
Oh, yeah. Same.
You know, I
would spend more on RDJ than pretty much any other actor.
That's what I'm saying. I can't think of anyone.
I think possibly someone like Idris Elba, just from my own personal...
Yeah, he's very cool.
Like, I would spend quite a bit of money to see him.
Sure.
But I can't see this working.
Because
when Supernova offers free Q&A, like, sessions with these guys...
That's going to be insane. Stu, were you saying you want to go on the Sunday? Am I right in saying?
Yeah. So I'll be on there on Sunday so I can see his Q&A. I can go to the panel.
Yeah.
Because at least then you get to see the guy, you can take a photo of him.
Exactly, while he's talking and stuff, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of opportunities there that doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, we know that these Q&As are like, they're not hard-hitting stuff, it's a bit of line entertainment. Like,
oh, absolutely.
You know, like, so Stu and myself will be in attendance on Sunday. Listeners, if you see us out there, two pretty good-looking guys rolling around.
Yeah, good luck picking us out of a crowd.
Yeah, one of them has love hearts in his eyes for Dean Cain. That's me. I'll be wearing my Superman T-shirt and a Batman cap that I'm going to take off when I see Dean Cain, because I don't want to be like, why are you coming to me wearing Batman?
You've thought this through.
Yeah, I have thought through. I even know what T-shirt I'm wearing. I've got two Superman. I'm not the biggest Superman fan. This is why Dean Cain, he really must have pulled the acting chops out to get me to love Superman this much. Because normally Superman, for me, I'm a little bit on the fence. I'm not on the fence on this one. I'm over the fence. And I'm going to wear my black Superman shirt. I won't bore the audience, but it's going to be something special. Look, that about covers it for Supernova. They have up their stakes, though, from last week when we were complaining and saying Sergeant Benson was going to be one of the draw cards. Well,
he's still a draw card.
He's still a draw card.
Don't write him off just yet, though.
He's what I call a stayer. He's a stayer.
So that you mean he's still alive.
He's still alive.
Yeah.
He's still alive. And you had his name last week, John Levine, which I never knew.
Yeah.
John Levine's still going, still trucking.
Still alive.
Now, Stu, before we finish with this topic, I said to you, I've polled a couple of people about how much they reckon Dean Cain's pulling, and I said 250. My girlfriend said maybe more. She said maybe more. But now,
maybe
Hemsworth's in the picture. What's he getting from this? Or is this publicity for Thor? Like, is the studio maybe giving him some money to do something here?
Well, I mean, he's the big Aussie star.
He is the Aussie star.
So it does fit with the Australian Comic Con.
Yeah.
A lot of it is publicity for Thor, obviously.
Thor Ragnarok coming, yeah.
But I think he's probably got something in his contract with the whole pricing of the autographs.
Yeah.
Which is why they're so expensive, because it does cost a shit ton of money.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not cheap. And you know what? Neither should he be. Like, the Supernova must have really been crossing their fingers and their toes to get this signing.
The other thing is, with Hemsworth, it's not even like he's got family in Sydney.
No, is he Gold Coast based or Byron Bay based or something?
I think at the moment he's got something in Byron, but he grew up Melbourne-ish.
Oh, did he? Okay, right, okay.
So, like, he's got family in Australia, obviously, still, sure. But none of them are in Sydney. So he's not, like, staying with family out here and catching up with them.
Maybe he has his family with him, though. Who knows? I don't know. I know nothing about his personal life. He may have his family with him,
but he wouldn't have, like, brothers and sisters and cousins.
Liam. Live. Liam? He's with Miley Cyrus, I know that.
I'm thinking more Luke.
Luke,
the other
Hemsworth. If I'm Luke Hemsworth, I'm attached to Chris Hemsworth wherever he goes. I'm like a fly feeding off the magnetism. I'm like, so Chris is busy, but you got me.
You kind of look like him if you squint really hard.
I can tell you stories all day long. Oh, there are so many stories.
I beat him up once.
Just yesterday, he told me to be quiet. Just yesterday, he said no to my money request. It was quite annoying. Tell me my allowance wouldn't be increased. But, yeah, I mean, I'd love to be here. Like, it really reminds me of the... You ever seen the show Entourage, Joe?
Yeah.
Because these guys must attract it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Can Wherever you imagine?
They go, they've got paparazzi, they've got crowds of people.
But, I mean, their own entourage. Like, you'd have to really cull the sort of, like, followers. Because a lot of people want to be your best friend at that level.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got a lot of best friends.
When you put that kind of money, you've got a lot of friends.
You got a lot of friends. And you got to start learning the word no.
Yeah.
You know, leave me alone. Thor's got to have some alone time. You know, Thor can't do it all the time. He can't be on 24/7.
Yeah.
Thor's going to burn out. I would refer to myself in the third person as Thor. But, like, you're aware it's Rolf? No, I'm not aware.
I think referring to yourself in the third person cancels out the need for having an entourage problem. Like, people aren't going to want to hang around a guy that refers to himself in the third person anyway.
It reminds me of Blade.
All the problems.
Blade 3, where Wesley would only communicate through post-it notes and he had to be addressed as Blade. I mean, that was a trap I'd fall into. You know,
yeah. Wesley went to jail shortly after this.
He did. He was headed on a slippery slope.
Yeah.
Through post-it notes. Now, turning from the exciting news, Stu, that we've had about Chris Hemsworth, and that really was quite exciting news, we've got Sunspot and Cannonball cast in New Mutants. Charlie Heaton, who's apparently in Stranger Things.
Yeah, he plays the older brother.
Oh, okay. Oh, I quite liked him.
The kind of a little bit psychotic.
Yeah, with the longer hair.
Yeah, with longer hair.
He was a little bit sort of damaged goods. Okay, I didn't realise it was him. He's playing Cannonball. And I don't know who Henry Zaga is, but he's Sunspot.
Henry Zaga's fresh.
Just a nobody.
Yeah, like brand new.
Wow. Straight off the casting line.
So hasn't been in really anything yet. Kind of background noise.
Sure. And can I be honest, Cannonball and Sunspot have never done anything for me whatsoever in my life.
No, more background noise.
Just almost complete zeros.
Yeah.
Are they
the kind of people that you...
Are they... They're X-Men, like, of some sort. They're like an X-Men subset sort of character. I sort of know of them more than anything.
Yes, Sunspot more than Cannonball for me.
Really? I'm like, I know so little about either that I...
Exactly. It's kind of, yeah.
They're best buddies, I think. That's their big thing. They're like a duet. They're like, yeah, you get one, you know, two for the price of one sort of thing, these guys. Like,
yeah, it's kind of light comic relief in some of these things.
Yeah.
Like, they're putting together a team and these guys are sitting on a beach going, how come they haven't called us?
It's actually what I've seen them on a beach together, and they're sort of both ladies' men, like, you know, like, well, yeah, we're living the dream.
Yeah, exactly.
We're Sunspot and Cannonball.
Yeah.
Two complete fuckwits. Yeah. That's always been my thought on them.
Now, I mean, who knows? They might try to make them call.
Oh, look, I'm sure they'll be going for...
If Warner can make Aquaman cool,
yeah.
I'm sure they could make Sunspot and Cannibal cool.
They're almost blank slate characters. That,
exactly. You know, you can do pretty much whatever you want. People aren't going to be in an uproar if you get the backstory.
They've got about five fans out there. Yeah, you know, exactly. Each of them have probably shared.
If you stuff up Wolverine's origin, you've got problems. But if you stuff up Cannonball's origin,
nobody knows.
Going to know.
Nobody knows how Cannonball had his origin. Nobody wants to know.
Three angry nerds banging on the
floor. Yeah, like, it's not fair, you ruined it.
Yeah.
Stu, report out of Forbes that Rian Johnson on The Last Jedi had a lot of creative freedom and the saga movies aren't as planned out of Star Wars as you might think. Now, Stu, what are your thoughts? It seems the directors have a large degree of creative freedom and there wasn't that much of a complete through through line that was tying Ryan Johnson into certain key events.
I'm really happy to hear this.
Yeah.
Really happy to hear this.
Okay.
I think whenever you try to tie something in too much to a bigger universe, it doesn't work because you start detracting from the single movie.
I hear what you're saying.
And ultimately, the most important part is making a good movie.
Yeah, yeah, true. So, yeah,
it gives him more time to spend looking at the characters, looking at the plot, without having to worry about where is this character going to end up? What do I have to do?
The only I agree with you 100% because I feel in these movies, like, I like honestly, Force Awakens, I don't remember much about what happened in terms of, you didn't really get a bigger picture sort of thing. It was all very, it seemed like right in front of you. I didn't get a bigger feeling for what was happening in the universe. So I felt like...
Oh, really?
Well, maybe it's just my interpretation. I mean, I know they destroyed Starkiller Base, but the feeling of what was going on in the wider universe, I wasn't 100% clear. Like, who's in control of the whole piece of the puzzle? Like, there's a resistance.
Yeah, so the Starkiller Base, I mean, it basically mimics the Death Star.
Yeah, totally.
In the now that they dissolved the parliament and the emperor's gone,
yes,
there was kind of that vacuum for power at the top.
Yep,
and they kind of filled that gap.
The Starkiller
base and the stormtroopers. And
so they were still controlling things.
Basically, yeah, they didn't. There isn't a parliament anymore.
No,
so they're kind of, it's like a military coup.
Okay,
is how I'm kind of viewing it.
Right. Okay. So anyway, my point was though, I didn't feel like I felt like the movie, although it did cover those topics, left a lot up in the air for other directors to come in and do a lot with.
I mean, yeah, I think they learned from Episode One where they focused too much on the politics.
So dull,
and you just lost so many.
It was
people.
So boring.
I think they've learned a lot and they've kind of minimised that as much as possible.
Because I want to see more action and more kind of like drama between the characters and kind of get a glimpse of the world rather than we're in the parliament, everyone's on those floating chairs and stuff and we're listening to people drone on and give actual speeches like it's real life, like it's a fantasy, you know?
So I don't know what they're aiming towards.
Mm.
It feels like what the... I can never remember the name... It's like the Imperial Fleet or something that...
Yeah.
What's the name of the Stormtroopers and all that faction?
I don't know. you're telling the story, Stu. I don't know. Like the... What, just in general?
Yeah.
The army or whatever?
Yeah, you've got the Resistance on one side, and then what's the opposing...
Oh, the First Order or something.
The First Order, yeah.
Thank you. Dave comes through.
The First Order is one faction of like the splintered...
Yeah, yeah. But are they controlling the worlds like the Empire did still? Or are they... I got the feeling they were off in the middle of nowhere running their own little far-right craziness. Like,
I got the feeling they were trying to be more like Galactic Police in a way.
So they were still involved?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Then everything was for nothing. The Empire still kept winning.
Well, this is like a shard of the Empire that was like hardcore.
Yeah.
That kind of stayed alive. It was nowhere near as powerful. They don't have the reach that the Empire had.
Oh, they don't? No. Okay. No. So they've gotten rich over a certain part.
But that's why they built the Starkiller Base, to try and get that reach back.
And that didn't work out for them.
Well, no, but they didn't realise that at the time.
Yeah. Okay. I'm still pretty proud that I got First Order, frankly. Yeah. Because you're talking to someone who's never read any of the supplemental material. Because I listened to Collider Jedi Council, and those guys were saying, but, like, there's so much lore in the books, like, since... Force Awakens, the filmmaker's got to be tied into. I'm like, really? I'm pretty confident these filmmakers, if they've got real freedom, can trample over the books if they want to.
Yes and no. I mean, there's a lot of canon that was removed when Disney bought.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
That all disappeared, but they've released a lot of books since.
A lot since, though, that's what I'm saying.
There is a lot of canon out there.
So that's my point. How can you have massive creative freedom with a story if you're tying into a bigger world?
It's the same way that Taika Waititi had... freedom to do what he wanted, and James Gunn had the freedom to do what he wanted in the context of their movies.
It has to get final approval.
Marvel universe.
Yeah.
They still need to connect to the rest of the universe.
Yeah.
But they were basically given a free rein of do basically whatever you want.
Sure.
You can't kill off this guy or this guy, but then do whatever you want.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. Which is basically what they've done with Ryan Johnson and...
Okay. Look, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, The Last Jedi's way off. I don't know if you've seen, what's his name, Mark Hamill... has been kicking up saying, I disagree with every choice you made and all that. He goes, but I've been proven wrong many times. Apparently he was openly been saying, like, when I saw the script for Last Jedi, I disagree with every choice you made for Luke Skywalker. Everything. And then he was like, but I've been proved wrong many times, and I have been again. Thumbs up, fans. Like, but he said that to multiple outlets. He said that at Star Wars Celebration.
Yeah, I mean, I got a feeling that was more clickbait than anything else. Like, he's just trying to
ramp it up, like, oh, yeah.
Ramp it up and throw something in there to kind of get people to...
If I'm Disney, I don't know if I want Luke Skywalker coming out and saying that. I've got to be honest. I'd shut that down. I'd be like, Mark Hamill, no one needs your fucking comedy. We're trying to build a franchise here. We don't need Luke Skywalker saying, I disagree with every choice you've made. To me, that's unprofessional.
When it's tongue-in-cheek and he follows it up with, and I've been proved wrong again...
Yeah, I suppose.
I think you can't really take that out of context.
I feel like it's a guy who can't be fired saying that.
He's probably the biggest living part left.
I would take him into the office.
Now that Han Solo's out,
I'd say.
And now that we don't have.
Oh, yeah, sadly, Carrie Fisher's in real life died, yeah.
We don't have her input. He's now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I feel like this is a guy who knows that they can't fire him.
I mean, it's him and what? Anthony Daniels.
I'm also saying, fuck you. Like, this is why I'm a director and you're the fucking star. Go out and perform. Like, you're not really anything, you're an actor playing a role.
Well, yeah, learn your lines. He knows that role better than anyone else does.
Oh, so he says. There's many a Star Wars nerd out there who I bet is just as knowledgeable. You know what I mean? Like, yes, I get you.
They wouldn't have that background knowledge that he has.
Look, he's a good actor, good voice actor. But I'm just saying, if I'm the director, if I'm Ryan Johnson, or if I'm the head of Disney, I wouldn't be thrilled with that comment.
Oh, I would be.
Would you?
If he sat there and just said, I like the movie.
Sure.
Everyone's like, yeah, blah, move on.
Sure. You like the bit of spice.
I would rather him say, yeah, I hated it, but I'm wrong again.
But apparently he said the same thing about Return of the Jedi. Like, I disagree with everything that's happening here, but it just turned out fantastic.
Yeah, but we know that was kind of a joke now that we've seen the movie where he was, you know, in one scene, doesn't say a word.
Who?
In The Force Awakens. And he was saying the same thing with Force Awakens.
Was he?
Yeah.
And all he was doing was that, just holding his hand out. This is just his shtick.
This is just what he does. It's just to drum up responses.
Fair enough. Have you ever seen the show Just Shoot Me?
Yeah, the sitcom.
Yes. Have you seen the one where Mark Hamill's in it? I love that one. I'll never forget the last bit because just to give listeners context, if you haven't seen Just Shoot Me, a very funny show that ran in the early 2000s. Basically, David Spade, is that his name?
David Spade
he's like the office, I don't know what he is, like office gopher almost, really. And
yeah,
sort of the receptionist. Anyway, he's a massive Star Wars nerd, and Mark Hamill comes in playing Mark Hamill to do something with the agency, the ad agency they work for, and David Spade's just hammering him with questions about Star Wars, like really pissing him off, like interrupting his lunch and stuff, and just really being annoying. And then Mark Hamill turns the tables and comes in as like an intern to be with David Spade and really grinds David Spade's gears by just acting like a complete fan of him. And then David Spade realizes at the end that Mark Hamill's been playing a prank got him the whole time, and as he's leaving, I never forget when he goes, "Is Skywalker Ranch a real ranch?" That's his last question. It always killed me. Is Skywalker Ranch a real ranch? such a good episode. Seriously, kids, go check that one out on YouTube or something. It's worth it. Now, Stu, looking at my next news item here, Punisher screens in November. Apparently, it screens in November this year. Remember, we were discussing the Netflix show Punisher?
Yeah. So the rest of this year, we've got Defenders and then Punisher for Netflix.
Yeah.
And we also see Inhumans and Gifted on other networks.
I will check out Gifted. I will check out the first episode of Inhumans. I will definitely watch Punisher, obviously. Is it going to be 13 episodes like Daredevil and all that? I hope so.
I'm not sure. Assuming so, but it's kind of up in the air about episode lengths at the moment.
Man, I'm so fucking pumped for this. I'm not even going to bore you with how pumped I am because, Stu, I'm turning to a bit of an editorial here. Stu, this is quite serious. So, have you read Secret Empire 3 this week?
I have.
Okay. We'll cover our actual review of it because it's not really pertaining to the contents of my discussion other than the final panel. Spoilers, kids out there. Stu, as you know, Captain America bleeds red, white, and blue. Would you agree? Captain America.
Until this recent.
Until Nick Spencer got his fucking hands on him and turned Cap into a Hydra agent, which was insulting to a lot of people. We tried to sort of suck it up and move on. Unfortunately, a little hard to move on from this next fact, Punisher is revealed at the end of Secret Empire 3 to be a Hydra agent. Stu, I almost threw my fucking computer across the room when I saw this incident play out before me. And here's my editorial. I mean, frankly, I'm not going to get abusive. I almost fired off a tweet to Nick Spencer because I just feel this is disrespecting everything the Punisher is. This is a guy who doesn't get the Punisher. Nothing about the Punisher has ever been about joining. I was talking to Drew Geraci, okay, on Drew's Views, and we were saying this. Punisher has never been about joining. He's a lone wolf, okay? He would not join Hydra in any fucking world. That what he would do is gun Hydra down in the street. He's always been against, as extreme as Punisher seems, he's gunned down many a right-wing activist in his time and extreme left-wing. He's totally out for himself. Now, this one actually hit me emotionally. And I was like, you've got me now a week after the event and I've chilled out a bit on it. But when it actually happened, I was so mad. And we were talking about online. I mentioned on Chuck's, Dixon's Facebook, he did this post. It was so awesome. Hulk with his hands over Doctor Strange, another character. And the caption was, come friends, let us go away from this dumb place. There's so many Punisher fans out there right now who are so disillusioned with Marvel and this actual event. Like, and I'll say this about Nick Spencer. I've been researching Nick Spencer in the last week, and I've been researching him today, Stu. And are you aware of this? Prior to his writing career, he had a political career.
Well, he tried to, yeah.
Tried to, yeah. And did you read the article that I sent you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's an article online which is sourced from Bleeding Cool, and a lot of it Nick Spencer supplied. So this isn't anything that isn't available online if you look. He ran for mayor of Cincinnati twice, unsuccessfully. He was coroner of a bar in the area in what appears to have been a downtown area, and he was running on sort of a law and order platform. And there's a link out there which details his political career. And it's pretty fucking hilarious. Like, Stu, did you read did you actually go to the article that was Spencer under siege?
No.
It's so fucking funny, man. Like, we were killing ourselves today online talking about this. Like, so back in about 2005, he's co-owner of a bar, okay, in Cincinnati, and it was kind of a downtown area, you know, potentially some high crime rates and stuff. And what he had was this blog, man, and he was blogging about, like, how he was trying to crack down on crime and, like, prostitution and drug dealing in the area. Dude, it was like the guy thought he was the Punisher, but he was this whiny little fucking comic book guy. And, like, he's just, like, the article's being written about Spencer's behind the wheel, his fingers crouched. He thinks the guy's going for a gun and he drives away. No actual reveal of whether the guy actually had a gun. And he's, like, calling the cops every 5 minutes, you know, reporting in crimes and stuff. And he's trying to supposedly clean up the area because he's trying to make money with his bar. It's a bizarre story, and this is all prior to him coming over. Now, here's my point. We entered 2017. I was giving Nick Spencer the benefit of the doubt. Haven't I said many times that parts of this Captain America story have been interesting? You know? Has it been too slow? Definitely.
Yeah.
But now we get to this scene with Punisher. And, Stu, what's your views here? Because I feel this is a betrayal of what Punisher stands for. Punisher would never do this. This is a guy who fundamentally does not get the character.
Well, first I'd say that after seeing Cap change, this is a far less of a trial than that.
Probably.
I think Captain America has fucking America in his
name. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
He's obviously more patriotic than Punisher.
Punisher's very patriotic himself, though. He's a former Marine.
Yeah. I mean, yes, but you compare it to Captain America, no one wins that war.
Sure, okay.
Captain America is the most patriotic Marvel heroes.
Yeah, true.
So I think this is a far lesser crime. We also haven't seen him do anything bad. He said Hail Hydra, and that's all we've seen.
That was enough for me. Dude, there's been stuff leaked about how in Secret Empire 4, he's doing Hail Hydra with the fist pumps. That's leaked as well. Images have leaked of that, of Punisher doing that.
True, but we've seen a bunch of other superheroes turn. I don't think this is as bad as some others have been. I
don't know. I'm struggling to go on.
The character or not, I think it's all going to be explained with the Cosmic Cube at the end. So no,
fuck this Cosmic Cube. Fuck Marvel. Fuck Nick Spencer. I wish this cube would just cure everything right now. I've had enough.
I think it's just taking way too much time.
Yeah, thank you. It's just killing me. Like, at a certain point in my life, about a week ago, before I read this issue, I thought I had the patience to continue on with this event. This has strained my patience to the absolute stretching point. Like, can Marvel get back to basics? Can we get Wolverine fucking back? Can we get Hulk back? Can we get Cap back? Can we get Punisher back? Does everyone have to be lost? How many people have to be lost to the hands of this insane writer who's just writing all these characters into a corner? Before, guess what, Stu? The Cosmic Cube is going to cure everything. Yeah. You know? So fucking predictable.
Well, yeah, but I mean...
Fuck!
For me, it's pick your battles, and this...
This is a war. This is a war, man.
No.
I've picked my battles.
This is a waste. Like, I'm not going to bother fighting in this thing.
Yeah, you just...
It's going to take 3 months of my time, and then it's going to end.
True,
and you know everything's going to go back to normal.
Oh, I agree with you there. Yeah.
I was more disappointed in the Deadpool spin-off where they killed Agent Coulson.
Yeah, that was out of nowhere.
That was a much bigger death than Punisher saying Hail Hydra.
Yeah.
Daredevil said Hail Hydra. I mean, it's kind of...
Did he?
Like, and
why are they all saying Hail Hydra? I don't understand it. But they're not brainwashed. They're not brainwashed, though. Captain America was changed, but they're not brainwashed. They're only going on Cap's instructions.
Yeah.
That's it. Why would Daredevil do that?
Because, as I said in that comic, they've had 80 years of Cap being right. Every time, even when they thought, no, he can't possibly be right, Cap's turned around and said, if you trusted me the whole time, this would have been over years before it could have been.
Like Cap, in essence, he's always...
Cap has always been the beacon of hope and truth and justice and all this sort of stuff for America.
Mm.
These guys are just trusting him, and they're trusting that he's doing the right
thing. Dude, I draw the fucking line. I mean, I consider myself a patriot.
I think you're getting riled up more because it's Punisher than because I'm very riled up.
But
if you replaced Punisher in that scene with, say, Deadpool...
I'm surprised by Daredevil. I didn't know that about Daredevil.
Like, they've pretty much everyone, unless they've been seen as...
Where's Spider-Man? Has Spider-Man fallen for victim to this?
Miles Morales, Spider-Man, is...
Yeah, he's in the youth squad. Okay. So pretty much everyone's falling for it.
Unless you've seen them in the Resistance.
Like Black Widow. Although Black Widow is running the Resistance, so Miles Morales is part of the Resistance.
Yeah, he's in the young team.
Yeah.
They split off into two factions.
Where's Peter Parker?
Dead?
Have we not seen him? Oh, we haven't seen him, have we?
I didn't think he was alive in this.
Isn't he? Is Peter Parker dead in the... I don't think he's dead in the Marvel Universe.
Is he not dead?
I don't think so.
But Miles Morales is here. If Miles Morales is in there, then Peter Parker's dead.
No. Miles Morales and Peter Parker have been coexisting in the post-Secret Wars universe up until recently. I mean, unless Peter Parker bought in, like, the last month after Clone Conspiracy. Yeah, definitely. Peter Parker and Miles Morales have both been in the post-Secret Wars. Miles Morales came from the alternate universe and wound up in the post-Secret Wars universe. So he got...
Well, in that case, if Peter Parker's alive, he's Hydra. Because he's not in the Resistance.
Good points, Stu. I don't like it, man. Can I be honest? I better go this far and say this. Like, it's rare for me to say this. I'm putting a mark under Nick Spencer's name. I consider this poor writing and poor characterization. And it just basically a half-baked event, which is... I don't get very riled. The last time I got riled was when Punisher turned into a zombie. And I like Rick Remender, and I didn't overreact at the time. I underreacted because I hated it, but I just got over it. I guess I'm a bit more vocal and older now and just give less of a fuck. But, like, I just feel like this is bullshit. And, I mean, I just feel that Nick Spencer's a joke. And I don't hear anyone liking it. Like, this is the thing. The guy's got a thin fucking skin too, man. Like, he's on Twitter, dude, giving essay-length answers to fucking fans about how they're wrong. He loves telling fans how wrong they are. You know, and they don't get him, they don't get his great story, blah, blah, blah. We should all bow down to Nick Spencer's fucking... He's just a writer, dude. Fuck him. Like, he's just a guy writing a story.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like his writing style doesn't work in comic books.
Yeah.
He needs a longer format novel kind of thing, where if you've got to have a big payoff and a big twist at the end, it works. Yeah.
I've read a lot of Morning Glories. I kind of rated it until it got to a point where I was no longer getting the enjoyment, but it was pretty good for a lot of the run. I haven't hated Nick Spencer until, like, what I'm seeing now. And I'm just like, he seems very slow. It's all very slow, and everything's, like, taking forever, and...
Yeah, that's my biggest qualm. It's not about how he's treated the characters.
Okay.
Because it's all going to work out in the wash at the end.
That's true.
We know none of this is sticking.
I've got to go. What's happening, Dave? Punisher is going to be Punisher at the end somehow.
If people die, that's kind of something that may not fix itself. We don't know.
Yeah. I'm not that... For the record, though, in 2017, making a stand, I'm not that keen on Daredevil saying Hail Hydra either, because I don't think that's in his character. Like, Stu, think about it like a character. Think about it like you or me. We're characters, okay? We have a personality. If tomorrow some guy went Hail Hydra to the whole world...
We don't know whether they're actually Hydra, whether they're just playing a part to infiltrate.
True. Good point, Stu.
Like, Deadpool's done this at Secret Wars.
I tell you what...
He went straight to the Skrulls and said, sign me up. he did. I'm going to work for you guys.
He did, yeah.
And then he flipped on them halfway through, killed everyone, and went, yeah, good job.
What did you think of it? I'm just trying to Deadpool 31. I thought it was a pretty slick issue. I was very surprised. I didn't know that was going to happen. Spoilers, kids. There was a big revealer in Deadpool 31.
Yeah, I mean, that's been floating around for ages online. So oh, has I it? Knew
okay.
that was
okay, cool.
coming before it happened.
Deadpool, though, he's the only... I want to give a get-out clause now. This is the one get-out clause for both Punisher and Deadpool. Both of them are huge fans of Captain America. Punisher has always considered Captain America his number one.
Exactly. That's why he's Hydra now.
That's why he's Hydra. I get it. Do I really believe Punisher, with all his years of military experience, would do this? Not really. He's always been above politics. Punisher has never been a political character. He's above petty politics. But he's above partisan politics. Deadpool is similarly, though, to Punisher, has always idolized Cap. So in that sense, I could see Deadpool switching over, doing what was asked of him by Cap. I could kind of see that. Because he's kind of a pawn.
I mean, I could see pretty much any character following Cap. If Cap came to you and said, I need you to join me, I need you to trust me.
Yeah, I can't tell you now.
I can't tell you now, you've got to trust me. I think that's enough to convince most characters in the MCU to follow.
Yeah, maybe.
There are a few that would stand out. People like Tony Stark has always kind of done his own thing. Yeah.
He's always his own man. He's an alpha male.
Exactly. He likes to think he's smart enough to figure out anything on his own.
No, Tony Stark is definitely the other outlier.
Yeah, but we've seen those two clash before because, you know, Cap said you got to trust me and Tony said no.
I guess for me, I consider myself like a lone wolf Punisher fan, like Punisher. I've always thought Punisher is not a joiner. But Drew made a good point. He said this. He said, okay, your Punisher fans out there might be buying Punisher and talking about Punisher, but in the general discourse of the mainstream, Punisher hasn't been spoken of too much in, say, the last 5 years. Okay, since Rucker left the title. Now, that was the last time he had kind of critical love. Now, maybe this is a way for Marvel. I will say this, because I know I've been very harsh. You know I love Marvel, okay? My reactions are coming out of emotion and out of love for a character. Maybe this is a way for Marvel to push Punisher back into the mainframe, you know? To push him back in the mainstream.
I mean, it could be. We don't know what the plan is with any of these characters post-Secret Empire, so... Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to get it out there, Stu, because I thought it was an important issue. I mean, you bring a good point and you bring some sanity. I mean, I'm glad we weren't recording
right now. It's just taking so long that I'm so over any of this.
Yeah, me too.
I don't have enough energy to care about any of these characters individually anymore.
Well, it's like Chuck said, come friends, let us go away from this dumb place, and Hulk with his arm over Doctor Strange and over...
Like, I feel like I would love to just fast forward 12 months and get back into some decent comics.
Oh, like, and would you agree with me getting expensive? Go back to fucking Cincinnati, you know?
Just do something more appropriate for your writing ability. Comics don't suit your writing ability.
Yeah. Listen to Stu. Stu knows what we're talking about. I might fire off a bit scattergun. Stu's giving the sniper shots. Go and write a fucking book. I'm not going to buy it. You know, and don't write a book about Punisher because you clearly don't get him. Now, Stu, here's another art. We've got to turn away from there. Jessica Jones and Daredevil and Luke Cage all announced for 2018 dates, and there was an article which I put onto the document, the Google document we use, which had all the Marvel TV properties announced for 2017 and 18, and it's quite a number, Stu.
Yeah, there are a lot of shows.
Like, you realise just how many shows are coming out. Like, it's a lot.
I mean, put it this way, ignoring animated shows,
yep,
we have 11 shows between the rest of this year and next year.
I struggle to watch, like, one show. I'm watching Better Call Saul right now, and that's an investment in my time. I watched Legends of Tomorrow, and I enjoyed it, but I didn't watch Flash. Like, Michelle and I want to catch up on Flash. Yeah. But, like, I'm a bit like, I love, look, obviously, no surprise, I watch Punisher. And, look, I love Jessica Jones and Daredevil and Luke Cage. Like, but that's a chunk of time. And then you factor in Runaways.
Especially if you want to get into the animated stuff as well. Yeah. You're looking at 18 TV shows in the next year and a half.
That's true. I mean, I've got a life. I've got a girlfriend. I've got a job. I've got a writing career. I've got The Signal. I mean, can I have, like, an assistant to sort of, like, watch the shows, give me the crib notes, you know, sort of working like that for me? What's Greg doing?
It's either that or give up sleep.
What's your brother doing?
I think he's given up on sleep.
He's given up on sleep now? Yeah okay. I don't know. It's just you've got to make some sacrifices.
Look, having said that, a lot of these shows I think you could skip pretty easily and not have any problems.
Well, you weren't too hot on Gifted.
Gifted looks terrible. Inhumans, maybe. I don't know if it's going to be any good.
Yeah, I'm not feeling
skippable.
It. Yeah,
It's got a good cast, and I think
what was the one I liked? Cloak and Dagger. I like the look of it.
See, that for me is a miss.
Yeah,
I think you could miss that. New Warriors, Runaway.
Is New Warriors a show?
New Warriors, yeah, it's on Freefall. Same as
Cloak & Dagger. Oh, fuck. No thanks.
It's in that same universe.
No thank you. I've always said no to New Warriors my entire comic reading life.
Yeah. And then, Runaways.
I thought those idiots, I mean, Cannonball and Sunspot were from... Most of
the animated stuff as well, I don't think...
I will try to give it...
People in our generation will be less inclined to view some of this stuff.
I will give the new Spider-Man animated a chance.
Deadpool animated, I think, is a go for us.
That's a huge go.
But things like Big Hero 6, Marvel Future, Avengers...
Oh, please. They're for the kids.
A lot of these you can miss. They're Disney Channel kids.
They're kids, yeah. Future Avengers, it's for the kids, man.
Yeah, and they've got a Guardians one and a Spider-Man one and...
I'll watch the Spider-Man one. I actually watched all of Ultimate Spider-Man. I really enjoyed it. The animated show?
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
I think that's the kind of stuff that if you're enjoying the Netflix stuff, completely different demographic.
Mm. Oh, completely different.
Realistically, depending on what demographic you're in, you're only going to watch maybe half of these shows.
Will you give Runaways a chance?
I will try it for maybe a couple episodes.
I would say give it a try. It could be hopeless. Could be terrible.
I mean, it's on my I will try it list.
Sure.
Which is pretty much anything Marvel's going to release.
Here's a question for you, Stu. Are you going to watch Punisher?
Yes. Netflix, I will watch it.
Then we can continue this podcast. That's good to know.
I may not enjoy it, but I'll watch
it. Yeah, no, just watch. We can discuss. Dude, as always, man, when you roll in, you give your opinion. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, so far, I've enjoyed everything on Netflix.
Yeah, so have I. It's been high.
Iron Fist was a low point, but I still enjoyed it.
No, I agree.
Could have been better, but
I just say for the audience too, Stu and I both seem to be battling through colds. I feel like I'm getting a cold more and more as long as we talk. You sound like you're a bit foggy over there as well.
A little bit, and it's pouring with rain.
Pouring with rain in Sydney, yeah. And I'm still half crippled.
Still half crippled.
I'm half crippled with a cold. I mean, I've never been more vulnerable.
But we're fighting through for you guys.
We're fighting through, yeah. We're packing heat. Now, Stu, here's a... Yeah, good one, Stu. Someone's like, ka-ching! Stu, the Spider-Man Homecoming Shocker figure, did you get a chance to look at this?
Yeah. So, I mean, we knew the Shocker was going to be in the movie. We've seen him in the trailers.
Yes.
But this is the first time we got a proper look at him.
I kind of dug it, man. Like, so, the Shocker is different from the Vulture, but he's going to be involved in the same crew, is he? In the same crew as...
Yeah, well, remember, in the trailer, we kind of see him... pump the fist, and there's like that purple lightning.
Yeah.
And then he punches Spider-Man through a bus.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. We've kind of seen a version of it. We've seen him standing next to what we think is the Tinkerer. Or
The
Toy Man or some kind of technical genius.
Yeah. The Tinkerer would make sense.
The Tinkerer fits, played by Donald Glover.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, so cool. That's Donald Glover's like standing in the background of all these scenes.
Yeah, okay.
So we think he's been working on these...
Oh, that's pretty cool.
...weapons. People like the...
Vulture.
Vulture. Well, yeah.
His suit.
The Vulture.
Dude, I'm looking forward to this movie. It's in July, isn't it?
7th of the 7th, yeah.
Bring it on, man. Bring it on. Yeah, I also love how in these days of, like, studios trying to lock down so many details, how often the toy companies are the ones that reveal the designs.
Yeah, like, I also wonder so how funny. Much... They've planned to do that.
I sometimes think they haven't. I think sometimes like, Lego often leaks. Yeah.
Lego released a bunch of spoilers for Thor, apparently.
Yeah. And it's just like, Legos just seem to do their own thing. They just chuck it out there. Like, they're like, just have it, kids. Like,
who's bigger at this point? Is Lego bigger than Marvel?
Lego's big. I don't know if
Lego is huge.
They're not as big as maybe Disney itself, but they are big. Put it this way, they're a license for making money. I mean, they are so successful. The Lego rebrand is one of the most intriguing stories, I reckon, corporate stories that could be studied. Like how they probably at one point slumped to almost extinction and then came roaring back, you know, by attaching themselves to so many big licensed properties.
I mean, Lego now is worth more than $20 billion.
Jesus, really?
Yeah.
That is amazing. Like,
it's big.
That is big. That is crazy. Now, Stu, just before we turn to the next article, I might just have a quick break because I've got to have a cup of tea, okay, for my poor voice. So, Stu, just turning to my next item on the agenda here, I actually found this really interesting bit of speculation, and it's in relation to a show I don't watch, but I have watched a bit of, Gotham.
So it's kind of got more traction in the last week or two.
Okay.
But it first started about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
The rumours that this isn't a show looking at Batman's origin, mm-hmm. which everyone just kind of assumed with Bruce Wayne.
Bruce Wayne, yep.
And in fact, he is credited as Batman.
Okay.
But there's talk that this is actually Owlman.
Which I love. I love that theory. Totally, yeah.
When I read it, I was like, okay, that everything makes sense now.
And honestly, Owlman, I mean, he's basically just a bad version of Batman.
Think of Community, the darkest timeline.
Yeah.
This is the darkest version of Batman.
Yeah, and I mean, he's not a character without some sympathetic beats. I've read a bit of Owlman where he's got sort of... Have you read Grant Morrison's Earth 2?
Yeah, like in that.
Like, he's very intelligent.
Oh, yeah, it's the same character. He's just willing to go the step further, and he's not worried that if he has to take a life to save others, he's going to do that.
He's not bound by the same moral concerns as your regular Batman.
No, absolutely.
And so, I mean, I don't watch Gotham, so in the show, is the kid getting a bit darker?
It's not so much him. It's still quite a young kid. It focuses more on the villains.
Right, yeah.
But you see, like, Jim Gordon happy to kill people.
Yeah.
You see a lot of the villains are super dark.
Yeah.
Like, they're just indiscriminately killing heads.
Because part of Owlman, from what I know, is he's in a darker world.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's darker. The good guys are dark. The bad guys are super dark.
Yeah. Like Ultraman. It's a Superman analog.
Yeah.
He's crazy. Wonder. What do they call her? Is it Wonder Woman they call her? And it's like Lois Lane, but she's got like superpowers in that universe.
Yeah, and they've got another Wonder Woman as well.
You know the chick I'm talking about, the one who's Ultraman's consort, like. But Owlman has the affair with her all the time.
Isn't that meant to be the Wonder Woman?
Yeah, that's the Wonder Woman, but I think it's Lois, isn't it? Is it Lois?
It's been a while since I've read it.
I'm not actually sure. I always thought it was Lois, but I could be 100% wrong. But that character herself is fascinating.
Mm.
That superpowered character. Yeah, she's meant to be in the Wonder Woman analog, but I think it might actually be the Lois Lane rather than Diana.
Called like Superwoman or something.
So, I think she might be called Superwoman.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
Look, I love this fan theory. I think it works really well. It fits with this kind of dark universe.
I wonder how. I mean, honestly,
I doubt the showrunners are going to have the balls to pull it
off. No, yeah, it would take some serious balls. And I mean, I have heard rumblings in the last couple of weeks that Gotham has actually gotten quite good. I haven't been watching it.
Yeah, season one was really pretty good.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah,
and then it kind of dropped off.
Yeah, that's when I dropped. It lost.
I left halfway through season two as well.
Yeah.
And now apparently it's picking up again. So
Michelle and I might revisit it because it might be worth
struggling through a season or two of crap to get to something good again.
Well, I might just pick up. I might just pick up in season three. You know, I might skip season two and just go to like a season three and just see.
Yeah,
you know?
Maybe.
You know, sometimes you've got to. I don't always have the energy to go through like, oh, you've got to wade through endless like 22 episodes of shit. Well, if it's got a better in season three, that's where I'll pick up.
Like, for me, for those couple of seasons, it would be a case of put it on the background while you're doing something else.
Yeah, good point.
Just so when you get to those dramatic moments, you can tune in and go, oh, okay, yeah, this character's dead now.
That's a good point. They recast Poison Ivy, too. They upped her age. Like, you know... You know, in the early season, like, Catwoman's friend was Poison Ivy, a girl. They upped her age and, like, different actress.
That's a little disappointing.
Yeah, well, that was where I was. Like, I heard that and I was like, seriously? Like, really?
Because she's always been, to me, younger than Batman.
Younger
or the same age as Batman.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of lose me a little bit when you see these other characters so much older than the Batman character.
I know, it's just stupid, I know.
And you're like, imagine in 20 years.
I actually quite liked the girl playing Catwoman, Selina. I thought she was doing a pretty good performance.
Yeah, I liked her. I liked the Penguin. I thought that was
a bit too much of him, but I thought he was a good actor.
But I enjoyed his performance.
Yeah, yeah. It was good. Is he still in it or was he killed off?
No idea.
Yeah.
He was still gone when I
started. He was all over it when I was watching. Like, it was Penguin's fucking show almost, you know?
Yeah, well, once they got rid of Jaden Pinkett Smith's character, it became all about him, which I agree with. I think he was the most interesting character on the show.
Yeah, he was interesting, yeah.
Because, to be honest, the guy, I can never remember his name, the guy playing Gordon.
I don't know the actor's name.
He feels like a piece of cardboard to me.
Oh, yeah, he's pretty... Yeah.
He's the most lifeless actor in the world.
God, I can't believe he's with that chick. I'm so jealous. Like, that's all that goes through my mind. He's with... How do you pronounce her name? It's like Monica...
Marina Baccarin.
She's so gorgeous.
Yeah.
And he's attractive in his own way. Like, he's not a bad-looking guy, but, like, he is hit gold. He is struck fucking gold, that guy, in real life.
He feels like the most boring actor in the world to me.
Yeah, he's so generic, dude. Like, I just look at
especially when you paired him up in the early seasons with Donald Logue, who's such a great actor.
Yeah, he's so good, I agree.
He just stole all the screen time from it. That's all I could look at.
But like with she's killing it because she is gorgeous, man. I could watch her. I'm surprised I quit the show because like she must have been getting off screen time when I was watching because I was just in love with her. You know, she left her husband and everything for him. She left her marriage and everything. She actually had, from memory, and then had his kid.
I mean, I rate her as an actress.
Oh, I rate her highly. I rate her very highly. I think she's pretty good. She's excellent in Deadpool. She's shown her versatility in various roles. She was in Homeland. She's in V. And she was the escort in Firefly.
Yeah.
She's gorgeous.
There was a year or two there where she was in everything.
Yeah. My dreams. Permanently. No, she's. I honestly really genuinely like her. I think she's cool. Good luck to that guy, I guess. I guess he just... Hey, you swing for the fences, you'll hit one out of the ground every now and then, you know?
Who knows? Maybe he's insanely rich and we don't know about it.
Well, he's a lead actor on Gotham, so he's not doing badly.
Well,
it's not... I guarantee you he's worth more than you or I put together.
That's true, but... when he's someone like Miranda Backron, that's not...
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, he's playing out of his...
He needs to be insanely rich to pull this off.
Yeah.
Not lead in Gotham rich.
Maybe he's just a really nice guy, dude. Maybe he's just... fuck him as well. Like, how nice can this guy be?
If he's a super nice guy, he's a terrible actor.
He's okay. I mean, he's like... As you said, he's very wooden. It's a performance of no depth.
You could have put a cardboard cutout and just had him do a voiceover.
I mean, dude, he's from the OC is what I remember him from as well. He was in the OC back in the day. Yeah. He was terrible in that as well. Like,
pretty much everyone was.
Age has made him no better, put it that way.
He's not been practicing.
It's like he stumbled onto a show and then he stumbled into the most gorgeous woman in the world who's just like, oh, sure, I'll leave my husband. Why not? Like, clearly that marriage wasn't working out. Let's go for
he's got something going for him.
I'll go for the nearest thing I can see. And then she sees... like, just take a punt.
Right place, right time, yeah.
Totally. Now, Stu, turning to something else, Legends of Tomorrow, a show I actually watch, the old character of Isis, unfortunate name, she had a Saturday morning show in the mid-2000s, kind of a counterpart to Captain Marvel. I actually watched it on YouTube once. I don't know much about her character. She's kind of like a bit of a Captain Marvel kind of ripoff, but a chick. And she's joining the Legends of Tomorrow cast. Quite an attractive actress was cast. She passed my test. I thought, yeah, nice looking brunette. Doesn't worry me too much. I mean, from where I'm standing, look pretty good.
I mean, I'm kind of hoping they change the name.
They're not. Oh, how can you have a name? Like,
don't refer to her as Isis. You just refer to her as her alter ego kind of thing.
Who thought this was a good idea? Out of all the characters in DC to pick the one called Isis to bring back.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't put it in the news items, but I feel like, look, every now and then I have to be impartial and just announce the news as it is. But I agree with you. This is very strange.
She's not the only character called Isis that we've come. There's been plenty of characters called Isis throughout history.
Well, and a god, goddess, Isis.
Yeah, the Egyptian god.
Yeah. But just, in the context of now.
Right now, it's not a good time to be casting people called Isis.
No, I totally agree. But that's why it's odd that they've chosen this. Maybe they're doing some sort of...
It is as well. And it's not like it's an amazing character either.
It's a nothing character.
It's quite a forgettable character.
Dude, other than the show, I'm not even sure if she was around before the show. It's a zero of a character in DC. Like, you could easily read... I've never seen her in a DC comic. I'll say that much.
You could easily put pretty much any character. Like, they must have an amazing story lined up where you specifically need Isis.
Why not? You know what they should have brought in? Captain Marvel and Mary Marvel, Shazam, all that stuff. Bring that in. Because that's all connected to Isis. It's the same thing. Adam, all that kind of shit.
I think you're going to... I don't know what they're trying to do with the whole Marvel... With the DC movies versus TV.
But look at Arrow. They've cast Ra's al Ghul. They don't care. They just cast whoever they want. Like, they don't care what's happening in the movies because they know it's separate from the TV.
Yeah, so I don't know whether they're trying to keep this kind of thing a little separate
or
whether they're just going full ball, confuse the hell out of the audience members.
Well, I was chatting to a girl...
In the same way that Flash has got a different actor in Ezra Miller as opposed to the TV show.
Which is confusing. I was chatting to a girl at work who loves The Flash. She loves The Flash TV show with a passion. And she's not a particularly nerdy girl. She was watching the Justice League trailer. She goes, oh, there's a new Justice League trailer. I got very excited, then realized it was March and then had to not be that prick. You know, like, oh, I'm sorry, but, you know.
And actually.
So I wasn't at all. Of course, like, I was just happy she was happy. And then she's gone, I don't get why they've got a different Flash. And I thought, fair point, love. You know, like, she goes, I don't get it. They've got such a good flash. I go, I know, it's the TV that I want to mix it to. And the look she gave me was just like, I don't understand what you just said. Like, and I yeah. agree. I'm like, yeah.
You As don't... a casual fan, that doesn't make any sense
at all. Yeah. She goes, who's this idiot?
I'm hoping maybe they'll get to a point where they'll have, like, their alternate realities.
Oh, yeah, like in the multiverse. In the multiverse. Kind of yeah, thing. Yeah, that would make sense.
And that's the only way I could really describe this kind of thing.
So you've got the Batfleck universe. Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
But, yeah, it seems like a weird thing to do.
And so far this Flash has not been good in the movies. He's been pretty average.
In the movies? The two scenes?
What we've seen so far, it's not exactly made you love him.
No, I would say he's actually more endearing than most of the other characters.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like his cameo in Batman v Superman where he took out the bank robbers and...
No, that was in Suicide Squad.
That was in Suicide Squad. Yes, right.
I didn't mind it, but I didn't feel like it made a huge impression. There was the confusing one in Batman Superman, which confused me. People were complaining about it.
Where he, like, time traveled through to Bruce. And...
Sort of, yeah, but it was all very sort of up in the air, what was going on.
Yeah, which I'm assuming will make sense when we watch Justice League, I'm hoping.
Yeah, hope so. Let's hope so.
I really hope so.
I hope Justice League's good, man. That's what I hope, really, at the end of the day. Look, I thought Ezra Miller in the trailer looked all right, really, frankly. I've only seen him in one other role, which is in that Harry Potter thing, the Fantastic Beasts. That's the only other movie I've seen him in.
Weird role for him.
Yeah, it was, and I spent the whole movie going, who's that fucking guy? Why do I know this? That random actor. Why do I, who never know the names of...
Kid with a bowl
like, cut. Why do I know this? Familiar. And then when I cracked the code, it was like I stumbled upon, you know, the Pythagoras' theory, whatever we call it. Like, I was like, oh my God, I know who this is. It's Ezra Miller, the Flash. The fucking gender fluid kid. Okay, now we're on the same page.
I'm just picturing you like three quarters of the way through Harry Potter go, it's Flash!
Yeah, that was exactly what happened. That was exactly it too. And my brain was working at the speed of a snail, putting those connections together as well. Like, it was seriously like, Sherlock took a long time to crack that case. He's like, what's it? I'm going to need 3 hours. Just sit there. So, anyway, that covers Isis, the ridiculous casting of Isis in Legend of Pyro, which I strongly hope they rename. You'd think they could rename her, couldn't they?
I don't know. Or just stick with her alter ego. Don't have her super name show up.
Yeah. Good point.
I mean...
No one knows who she is.
Exactly. You can get away with pretty much anything here.
Now, so here's a little tidbit. Joel Kinnaman, who plays Rick Flagg in Suicide Squad, said Suicide Squad is expected to shoot next year to the Hollywood Reporter. He just mentioned it in passing.
I mean, that's... expected. We know it's coming out 2019.
Do we? Okay. So,
that's when it's slated to come out anyway.
I mean, there's nothing else attached. No one's heard anything about Mel Gibson since the initial reports. I heard David Ayer, someone was saying they wanted him back, some part of DC, Warner's was saying they were hoping David Ayer can come back for Suicide Squad 2. He's a very good director. Very good director.
I'd be happy with him coming back.
Yeah.
As long as he's learnt from his mistakes in the first movie.
Well, and the studio doesn't hand it to a fucking music video company to cut the film together, which is what happened.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous. David is an acclaimed director.
I'm hoping, because there were moments in Suicide Squad that were really good.
There were.
The way he handled some of those characters were really good as well. Yeah. I think he got a great performance out of even Jai Courtney. No one expected that.
Jai Courtney was really good in that movie.
Yeah.
It's the first movie I can say that about Jai Courtney.
And I think largely that's David Ayer.
Yeah. And, I mean, no one can take away from Margot Robbie's performance.
No, I mean, I think it's more expected that Margot Robbie and Will Smith are going to perform.
Sure. Well, Will Smith definitely, yeah.
I think someone like Jai Courtney went in there with... No great movies under his belt.
Terminator Genesis.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the only other role.
Die Hard 5.
Oh, that hurts. Love the Die Hard franchise, but that movie hurts.
He's had a lot of not good movies.
Dude, he's just so generic. He's the most agent
in all of Hollywood. The fact that he is still working
he's undercutting.
Is phenomenal.
His agent's undercutting like crazy.
His agent must be a genius.
Yeah, no. He's never in that movie though, I agree, he was good. Now, Stu, I've got one here. This is actually a spoiler. I haven't read the comic. I don't know if we're on the DC list this week for Batman 24, but this is a spoiler, so kids, brace yourself for this. The final page of Batman 24, which is on the internet, it's open knowledge now, Batman proposed to Catwoman on one bended knee at the end of Batman 24, Stu.
Yeah, so that's a bit big. Out of left centre.
I love Catwoman, but is Batman ready to take the final plunge? Become a married man? What do you think Kalman's reaction is going to be? Because, I mean, they actually have had quite a deep arc inside this Tom King's run. But, I mean, that's escalation on Batman's heart. I mean, to me, I love Catwoman, so I've got no real problems with him picking Catwoman, asking her to marry him, really. But it would have to surely be contingent upon them both leaving their lifestyles.
You'd have to think there's going to be some kind of massive change coming, or it's a... I don't know. I don't know how to take this news.
It would surprise me. I mean, and I love Catwoman. I mean, and I love their relationship too. And I mean, I'll often say, Stu, one of the best comic runs I've ever read, and it's inside the top three probably, is Ed Brubaker's Catwoman. And I like the relationship between her and Bruce in that they've had a relationship. They're friends. They have a real, they have a real solid connection. There's the thing.
Yeah. So he's on one knee. Marry me.
Marry me. Yeah. He's proposing. Which obviously is not good art. Great art.
Oh, it's a beautiful art.
Looks fantastic.
It looks like a great comic.
Is that from our DC previews? Oh, cool. So we actually do have it. I just haven't read it yet. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that. I hadn't read it. I knew we had the previews. I've been so busy this week with all the other news and stuff. Wow, I'll read that one after the show. But what do you hope she says? Yes or no? Sure. Where are your hopes?
I don't know. I think it's... From what I've seen of this comic, it's Bruce trying to woo her.
Yeah.
And she's kind of a little bit cold to
it. She's resistant to it.
So, I don't know. It could go either way. I feel like it's more likely going to be a no.
Yeah.
And it's going to cause a bit of tension, and that's going to add to this whole relationship they've had for decades now.
Yeah. And, I mean, even inside this run, it's always been on thin ice. Like, at one point, he thought she'd killed, 300 people or something. It turns out it wasn't her.
Yeah, exactly. It's always been a weird relationship. I can't see them... I could never see a wedding between these two characters.
The wedding is out there.
That would just be weird.
Inside normal continuity, I think in many an Elseworlds tale or Imaginary Stories tale back in the day, back in the 60s and stuff, they were married and have had kids and all that. There's all sorts of...
Yeah, and there's plenty of fan fiction out there where they get married and...
Oh, in my mind... In my mind, Bruce and Selena have always settled down together in the distant future. Like, they are a couple. A married couple, but inside the continuity of now. But, dude, maybe they're bold enough to go in that direction,
Maybe. I mean, we'll have to wait.
Interesting.
For Batman 25 to find out.
Unfortunately, no, because the next story, The War of Jokes and Riddles, is apparently a flashback. So there's going to be a look.
Oh, that's just cruel.
I read that online, but yeah, apparently.
That's cruel,
that is cruel, though. Because we actually want to know now, don't we? We want to know what Selena says. Maybe she'll say yes, and then they can have the... Okay, so we're engaged, and then they're engaged for, 3 years.
Who knows? I just... And they then could, they'll call it off after
3 years. Are they that couple in college who are always engaged and they break up?
Yeah.
You know that couple. Oh, yeah, he's my fiancé. I'm so sick of hearing you tell me he's your fiancé. I'm actually bored of it. Get married or don't get married. Yeah. You know what I mean? Make a fucking decision. You know these people, don't you, that are engaged forever?
Everyone knows that couple.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Seriously. Or break up, because you don't really love him.
Figure out what you want to do.
Yeah, we know you don't love him. We know you've got doubts. we read it between the lines. Yes, he's gay. We know.
You're an amazing friend.
Yeah. You're marrying your best friend. Yeah, I know, and I feel sorry for you. Now, Stu, I hope you've participated in something that obsessed me, the fan casting. Last week, we spent quite a bit of time, and I had quite a bit of chat on the Fist of Country page for fan casting of Silver and Black, the Silver Sable Black Cat movie.
Yeah.
That's coming out. Now, Stu, have you got your picks over there? Because what we'll do is each of them, we'll give our number one pick and, who we thought of.
Yeah, so I think Black Cat for me is harder. I've got three names here.
Sure.
I don't know if I can put them in order.
Oh, you don't need to put them in order, but
Silver Sable, I've got a pretty decent lineup here.
I reckon it's interesting. So, Stu, we'll go with you first. Who's your picks for Silver Sable?
Number one for me is Charlize Theron.
Oh, fantastic picks, Stu. Yeah.
I think she's the right age. She's the right build.
Yeah.
If you've seen the trailers for Atomic Blonde, she kicks ass.
Oh, she's gorgeous. And she's she's slightly more mature. She's
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
I think she's got the range. She could do a serious.
Oh, yeah.
I think that really works.
She's a great actress.
My other pick's Emily Blunt. I think she's got the action chops.
Yep. From Edge of Tomorrow. Yep, I loved her in that.
And the other two I've got here, Marina Baccarin made my list. That'd work.
Silver Sable.
Yeah.
Okay, I can see it, man. Yeah, I can see it. Give me the platinum blonde. Treatment?
Well, yeah, you'd give her the silver hair or the platinum blonde. I think that would really work.
Fuck, Stu, you've really gone to the A-team. Okay. I've gone the other way, but that's great.
The last one of my picks a little out there, and it's Eliza Dushku.
From Dollhouse?
Who was, yeah, the lead in Dollhouse.
I liked her. I've always liked her.
And I think she...
TV actress, though. Can she make the leap to the big screen?
That was why she's last on my list. I think she's got...
Good actress.
She could do it. She could play the accent. She could...
Yeah, no, I could see her doing it.
And she's done action before. She's worked with Joss Whedon.
I love her in Dollhouse. How old is she now? She'd be about 40, wouldn't she?
I don't know. I will check while you're reading out your list.
Yeah. So that's a fantastic list, Joe. I've got to say, you've sold me on just about every single one of them. That's a strong list. My number one pick, Stu, is Marlene Ackerman, a gorgeous blonde who viewers might know best from In Watchmen. She plays
She plays the wife.
Is it Silk Spectre? She plays like Owlman's girlfriend.
Yeah.
And she's married to Dr. Manhattan.
Married to Dr. Manhattan.
Are they married or are they just... She's just the girlfriend.
I assume they were married.
The funny part for me was when I was casting in my head, this is a problem I often have, I had an image in my head of this blonde.
Yeah.
And it was there. And I kept trying to unlock it. And I wasn't sure if it was just me, you know, and I was really struggling. I eventually, you know how I got to it? I did blonde actresses over 30 on IMDb. No, that's one of the best ways to do fan casting. And I eventually got a picture and a match in my head. But that's my number one. I think she'd be fantastic.
I mean, she's been around for a while, but nothing of... recently?
No, and I think she's hungry for a hit. She can act, and she's gorgeous.
A lot of what she's been doing recently are rom-coms and things like that.
Sure, okay.
Like, she's done a couple of Ben Stiller.
Oh, okay, has she? Rom-coms. Right. All right. Now, my number two, not even my number two, my other one is Naomi Watts.
I really like that bit.
Oh, Naomi Watts is one of my favourite actresses, man. I think this would be a great leap for her into a more mainstream role. Like, she does a lot of arty stuff. We haven't seen a lot of her. I mean, where is Naomi? She's an Aussie, isn't she? Originally? I think she's an Aussie. I'm pretty confident Naomi Watts is in Australia.
I had a feeling that Naomi Watts was one of those people Australia's claimed, but he's not necessarily Australian.
Oh, well, that'll do, Stu. That's fine. That means she's an Australian, okay?
I've got a feeling she was born in England.
Okay, well, whatever. Naomi Watts.
Born in the UK. There you go.
Oh, yeah, but what is her citizenship? I think she might be Australian, dude. Citizenship. Australian. I'm sure.
Debuted in Australia.
Yeah, there you go, mate.
But born, and she's listed as English.
Disagree with the assessment on IMDb. So, Naomi, I can see you an Aussie. Honorary Aussie, at least. Would you agree, Stu? She's in Ned Kelly.
We kind of claimed her.
I've claimed her.
But we claim a lot of people here.
Russell Crowe.
Yeah, we just claim people.
Crowded House.
Have you ever remotely been connected to Australia? You're now ours.
Who cares? Naomi Watts, I think, is a fantastic actress. And I think she could do very well in this role. I can see her, man. In my head, that was the girl I was thinking of. I've got this... If you look at some of the pictures of Naomi Watts, she's gorgeous, man. She can play, like, hometown girl. She can go more statuesque beauty. She's got a lot of range.
My question is more the action.
We've not seen her in a role like this.
Exactly. We've not seen her do that.
But we hadn't seen... Fight scene kind of thing. We haven't seen Robin Penn. Formerly, I was going to say Robin... Not Robin Wright, sorry. Okay, we've not seen her in action, and she was fantastic in Wonder Woman.
No, that's very true.
Gal Gadot, you know what I mean? Like, these actresses can do it. Naomi Watts was in Ned Kelly. I'm sure she could play the role of Silver Sable. It's not going to be that much action. Like, a lot of it's looking like it's action.
Oh, I think if they're going to do a movie around her and Black Cat, there's going to be a lot of action.
Okay.
Like, she's going to be playing the mercenary type role.
Still, I could see it, man. The only thing is, she's so beautiful. And is Silver Sable a slightly harder-edged character? I don't know. But I just feel like this is Hollywood. They're going to cast attractive. I mean, I liked your picks. So they were all attractive. My final pick is Kim Dickens. You might know her as Fear the Walking Dead, the wife in Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, I had She's to got a harder edge. Google her. Yeah. It wasn't a name that I'm familiar with.
No, well, I go on IMDb, man. I actually go on blonde actresses over 30, over 40, under 20. I use that kind of system. This is actually a tribute to my mate Joe Wappo on Bruce Wayne's World. He does a lot of fan casting, and he spends a lot of time on it. He's very good at it. So I thought we'd kind of up our game in this era as well because, Bruce Wayne's World is one of my favourite shows, and let's get in the game.
I mean, I'm not very good at fan casting. I pick people that I know of.
That's why you got to hit IMDb, buddy.
Which I think is limiting.
Yeah, it's limiting because when you start looking on IMDb and looking in the lists make it easy for you. That's when you start to really get some opportunities and you can go on, okay, that's a good face.
I mean, that's when you can start to get, yeah, the unheard of.
Yeah, and you can look at their body of work or what they've done. You can start to build a picture. Now, Stu, turning to Black Cat, do you want me to lead off?
Yeah, go for it. What have you got?
So I was, and I want to give credit here. I was chatting to my pals on Fist of Khonshu, the cats on Fist of Khonshu, and Rebecca on there said she wouldn't be surprised to see them go like racial, to go like ethnic, with the choice. Yeah, see, of Black Cat.
I thought like Black Cat wouldn't be, but Silver Sable would be
potentially. Yeah, but I went. So I went Latino, and I've gone. My number one is Bella Thorne. If you look at her on Google,
yep,
attractive, solid body of work behind her. And my second, and this is just purely based on IMDb searching, Isa Gonzalez, who in Dust Till Dawn, a TV series, fantastic looking actress. I could picture either of them as Black Cat, man. I think Latino Black Cat is starting to sing to me. I think you could also go Asian, but I just had those two down, man. I thought Bella Thorne looked real good.
Yeah, although very white, not...
She's Latino.
She's got red hair.
So? Dude, she was in the Latino lists. I can't tell you. I don't know what to tell you. She's okay. Latino lists, man.
She's American.
Yeah, but that's a lot of Latinos, dude.
Well, yeah. I would say if you didn't know that, she doesn't look...
Okay. Well, all right. So maybe I've gone a bit white, he's saying. I'm a bit white bread over here.
I think if you're trying to cast Latino... I think you've got to go a little harder than...
I'm the typical Hollywood casting director, though, Stuart. Like,
this, I would guess Irish first.
Well, here's a picture of her today. She's gone for lunch with her sister. Okay, there's the picture. I could see Latina in there.
I would go Irish.
Yeah, okay, I could see what you're saying. I could see what you're saying, yeah. Okay, I mean, I can see what you're saying.
I don't know whether she's got Latino in her background. And
no, she definitely... Dude, she's in the Latino list. She must have. So...
Okay.
Well, I don't know, man. Like, look at her sister. I mean, fucking take look at that picture and tell me what you're thinking that is. Look at the sister.
I think her sister's got problems. I don't know about Latino, but...
I think her sister's riding on the cash. I think her sister... Look, regardless, I mean, I'm not purely just picking on... But Bella Thorne shows off a nipple piercing in a sheer top. Well, I guess I'll have to look on that for research.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, good point, Stu, because there she is again, 8 hours ago. Good point, actually.
Red, blonde hair, white.
No, nothing. Oh, wow. Look at what she's wearing.
Okay.
Shoe?
Okay. Yeah.
Continuing her alternative look.
I've just got this article. 15 stars you never knew were Latino.
How typical.
Tops that.
How typical I've picked her in my list.
Technically,
okay.
Yes, you're right, Dave.
No.
Dave, you are struggling to pick her out of a crowd of.
Look at. Have you seen Isa Gonzalez, though? The Dust Till Dawn? She's definitely looking a lot more Latino.
I think that's a.
I think she's a good solid pick. Look
if you're trying to go for that.
She's a good solid pick. Casting. Good solid pick. Stu, now turning over to you. Who did you have for fan casting for Black Cat?
Emma Watson.
Oh, yeah. But still my beating heart.
Chloe Grace Moretz.
Is that the chick from who played Hit Girl?
Yep, Hit Girl. Yeah. She was in the Bad Neighbors 2 sorority.
I like her as an actress.
My last one is Saoirse Ronan.
I know the name. What do I know her from?
So she was nominated for her role in, I believe it's Brooklyn.
Okay. I know the name. I don't know how or why I know it.
Yeah, she's been in a few things.
Okay.
Not... Action.
Can I have a look? Like a picture of her?
Yeah,
sure. I just want to get a visual of what she is looking like.
This is what she looks like.
Oh, she's very pretty. Okay. Yeah, very statuesque.
They're all around the same age. They're all good actresses.
She looked like early 20s, am I right in saying? Early 20s to mid-20s?
Yeah, 23.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, look, and this is the beauty about casting. Look, I think this is a really important casting for Sony. I'm not going to underplay it. I think a duet. We've just seen a female director lead a female-led movie to over 100 million in the States and 220 million worldwide. Casting's vital, okay? Hollywood's sexist, audiences are sexist. You know what I'm saying? You need to sway them with good actresses and good material.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, you can't just get two hacks. And I don't mind if they go off the beaten path. I just want to get two good actresses. That's all I care about. I'll be brutally honest. And yes, they have to be attractive, like, because it's Hollywood, you know?
Yeah, I mean, to an extent. I think both these characters are known, especially Silver Sable is known as being attractive.
Sure.
I think Black Hat, you can get away with pretty much anything. You could cast most young actresses. I don't think they need to be attractive in that role.
Any actress who's going to get a lead role in this is going to be attractive.
Well, yeah, but there's levels of...
Yeah, I'm not saying she needs to be a supermodel.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I think all our picks so far have been really, really pretty spot on. I think you killed it over there with your picks for Silver Sable, man. You were on fire. Jesus Christ, I thought I did with Naomi Watts.
I like Naomi Watts.
I like Naomi Watts a lot. It'd be good to see Naomi Watts brought out into a more like a film we would watch, you know? It feels like she's been hiding under light a little bit.
She was in King Kong. She played the lead in that.
Yeah, okay. Peter Jackson's, but that was a long time ago. King Kong. She's still looking very good. I looked at pictures of her. One thing I do when I fan cast is I type in today's year, because often we visualize actors and actresses from 10 years ago. You've got to look how they look today.
And see, that's why I'm picking these people not off a list where I don't...
Sure.
I'm picking them based off what I know them in.
Yeah.
Which is normally fairly recent.
Okay. Well, you've done well. Your picks were very good.
I think the Eliza Dushku and Marina Baccarin haven't... I haven't seen them for a couple of years. But it's not long enough that they've changed that much.
Yeah. I saw a recent picture of Eliza Dushku. She still looked pretty good.
Yeah. And, I mean, really? They're all in their mid-30s, which I think is a good age for...
Good age for Silver Sable.
Sable.
Yeah.
Charlize Theron would be the oldest.
Yeah, she's early 40s, I think. Yeah.
But she could still do it easily.
She's gorgeous.
Can't stress enough. Go and see the Atomic Blonde trailer.
Yeah, I want to see the movie. When's it out?
Soon, I think.
Yeah, I really want to see it. I'm actually pretty pumped for it. I saw a poster for it the other day when we came back from Wonder Woman. I was like, man, I want to see this.
Yeah, I saw the trailer when I was sitting there for Wonder Woman.
Cool. Oh, really? I didn't see it.
You didn't see the trailer?
No, our screening didn't have it.
Oh, it's so good. I've got to check it out.
All right. And now, Stu, I think we've covered fan casting, so we'll turn to weekly comics. Now, Stu, the first one in weekly comics this week was Cable One. I really thought it was a solid entry with some beautiful art. And James Robinson, a very capable storyteller, we know him from Starman and Golden Age and various other things. Look, I'm not saying it was blowing anyone away, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was a little underwhelmed.
Sure. Good art, though. Did you like the art? I thought the art was very good.
Yeah, the art was fine. I didn't think it was amazing, but it was...
It was solid. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, James Robinson's a good storyteller. He had a long run on Starman in the 90s. He is a very good storyteller. Had a good good Fantastic Four run just before it got cancelled.
Like for me, this felt way too short.
It was short, yeah.
We barely got any kind of story, anything, really.
Basically, he went back in time to Wild West.
Yeah, he was in the West where he took out a town of people, like the... Town was under attack by these group of bandits.
Who had sort of access to advanced weaponry.
Yeah, that he kind of took down, interrogated the last one, found out where the guy that equipped him with these advanced weapons had gone to.
Yep.
And he tracks him down to ancient Japan.
That's right.
Where he runs into a band of Ronin.
Yeah. Is that where it ended?
Yeah, they kind of fight and basically...
Oh, that's right. They got him.
They, basically defeat Cable.
Yeah. Look. I'm not going to pretend that this changed my life. I just felt it was a good, solid start to something, you know?
Solid, nothing special. No. But I'd like
I gave it 3 out of 5.
I've also got 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Now, turning to the next one, we've discussed it at some point, Deadpool 31. I've got here slick, serious, and engaging. I was pretty much captivated by this. I felt it was it was dark. It was Agent Coulson. Basically, he's given the job to assassinate Agent Coulson. It's told in a mixture of flashback and current time.
Yeah, they're trying to mix the backstories for both Agent Coulson and Deadpool, showing them both growing up being fans of Cap.
Yep.
Both growing up in the system, trying to prove to Cap that they're worthy and that they're useful members of this team. And
I like when Deadpool said, the first time I met him, I was so nervous I fought him.
Yeah, exactly. The comedy for me was a little lack for Deadpool.
Yeah.
I expected funnier.
Often Joey Duggan, he does make it very funny, but he'll also go darker. His Deadpool graduates into a darker place, and then
yeah, but I think Deadpool works when it gets really dark, and then he just breaks that tension with some kind of stupid line that he says.
Yeah,
and it just works with him.
He did say he was having a comedy oscomy or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and that was.
Yeah, you were on the fence over there?
I was on the fence with this one.
Look, I dug it.
Not loved it.
Okay. The content was confronting. Like, it was a dark issue.
It was a dark, especially the ending.
Yeah, the ending was
when
dark.
When you see Deadpool really questioning whether he did the right thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the first time I've ever seen Deadpool do that. He's always been so confident in what he's done.
I'll tell you, Joe Duggan is one of my all-time favourite writers. He's done Deadpool now for a long run, 31 issues here and probably another 30 in the previous run. He has a really good one in Original Sin where Sabretooth has a flashback, which is told in 90s style. So Sabretooth and Deadpool travel all the way up to Deadpool's parents' house in Canada. And Deadpool goes in, kills his parents and burns the house down and doesn't really remember that they're his parents. He sort of has an inkling and they're driving back. And Sabretooth actually says, are you sure you want to do this? And he goes, yeah, it's cool. And he goes in there, he sees a picture. It's really dark. Jerry Duggan has this tendency to sometimes take it into a really dark place and then go out and have a real brightness to things.
I like that in the context of Secret Empire.
Yeah.
Because I think the people that are on Team Hydra at the moment are questioning their loyalty to Hydra.
Yeah.
They're not sure if Cap is still the same guy they remember growing up with.
Yep.
So there is that question of whether they're on the right side still, whether they're the good guys or the bad guys. They don't know.
Yeah.
And I think going super dark is a way to kind of test their resolve.
Mm.
And you saw Deadpool questioning.
Yeah, he said, why are we doing this?
At the end of it, when he shot...
What was the point of this?
Coulson.
Yeah.
It was kind of, did I really... want to do that? That seems...
Yeah. He even
you
said...
You saw him looking at his reflection in that shattered glass.
Yeah.
Just like contemplating what he'd done. I thought that was really cool.
Isn't it fascinating to see Deadpool, who could have been such a throwaway character, given depth? You know, he's given some depth, but he's also given this really reflexive self-commentary on himself. Like, I actually find him a fascinating character in Jerry Duggan's hands.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. He's pulling the levers. I chatted Jerry Duggan quite regularly on Twitter. He's a lovely guy. He really is. And, I don't know. I'd love to have him on the show one day. We'd have so many questions. He's a really gifted comedian who has really made a big career for himself in comic books now.
I think you've got to be pretty talented to be able to write someone like Deadpool.
Yeah, yeah. To last.
To last?
Yeah. And he's been doing it now for God knows how long, since All New Marvel, so probably 5-6 years.
Yeah, and that's tough.
And it's been a good run, dude. It's been a really good run. Yeah. No, he's a very interesting guy. Now, Stu, we've already discussed, I guess, where I had my issues with Secret Empire 3. The issue itself, though, came up this week. Very slow storytelling.
Yeah, it's too slow for me. That's what's lost me.
Yeah, it's really slow, isn't it? What's with the art, dude? Like, I've got to hear, what is with the art choice to make Captain America's face appear mummified? The art seemed really kind of, like, really artsy.
Yeah, they've gone for, like, a heavy sketched kind of look.
What the fuck's going on? Like,
watercolory.
This is an event comic book. I don't know if I want to, like, I want my character to basically be representing that, you know, it as if it's real. Like, unless there's some effect at play, I don't want to be looking at Cap and going, oh, well, the artist just made the really dramatic decision to make him appear mummified for no fucking reason.
I never got the mummified.
Well, it's kind of like if you look at the face, look at the skin, it's all stretched and there's all this abstract shadow and stuff on him. So it's just not a particularly realistic looking face.
You're talking about which Cap? Because there's two Caps in this.
Just the Hydra Cap. Oh, I don't know. Okay. I didn't like it. I just didn't like the art. And I also didn't understand what was going on in the other storyline. So that was the Cap with the beard. Yeah.
Yeah, so it follows him from the last one where he's picked up the girl and she's dying in his arms and he's just walking her to try to get some water.
Is he in the real world or in the world with Cap and everyone else? Or is he in a different reality?
I don't know. We assume he's in the same world. But
see, I was picking up that he might have been in a different reality.
Could be a different reality. Although the art style's the same, normally they'd subtly change that.
Could this kind of be like Cap's ideal self still existing in another reality that's going to merge into Hydra Cap?
Who knows?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not feeling it, man. This entry for me was a 5 out of 10.
Yeah, for me it's a 4. I'm running out of time.
Tell the story, Nick Spencer.
I don't want to spend years of my life reading something that's not going to win out anything.
Just so I can go, remember I was talking about the Siege of Nick Spencer fucking article. There's quotes in the thing about his political career on his blog where he's got stuff like, they're not going, he's talking about drug dealers and stuff, and he's going, I'll do everything it takes to bring them down. Like, he thought he was like the Punisher Man back on the streets of Cincinnati in 2005. This thin, have you seen him? He's a thin, geeky comic book writer, man.
I'm just over this.
You're not feeling it, are you?
I'm tired of Secret Empire now.
It's boring Empire. More like boring Empire.
Yeah, they just need to finish it.
Fuck it. I'm sick of it. But I will say this. Secret Empire Uprising 1, I really enjoyed. I thought this was actually a real breath of fresh air.
Oh, I felt the opposite.
Really didn't like it. Like
Secret Empire 3, but slower.
Oh, no, I enjoyed it. Like the infiltrating the
choir.
It was funny, though. It was played for laughs. Oh. I gave it an 8 out of 10. I thought it was a good issue, man.
This is a 2.
Wowee.
And they filled it with all of my favourite characters.
Oh, it was filled with the Nobody crew.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know, but you have to take them.
It was filled with who cares.
It was filled with one guy. I've got no idea who one guy was. There was one guy who I don't know who he was, man. Like, had sort of longer hair. Yeah, he didn't really identify himself at any point. Like, yeah. It was the nobody crew.
It was the nobody crew. They achieved nothing.
I think they infiltrated the choir.
They infiltrated a choir.
Dude, it was played for laughs, man. You're not getting the laughs over there, are you? Is it because you've got the colds, Stu? Because you're not picking up the laughs, man.
This could have been funny if they'd started with this kind of tone.
Yeah.
But we're now 8 weeks in.
Yeah.
And it just feels like I'm dying of, like, they need to move quicker.
Dude, we've got another, like, fucking, I think, like, 7 or 8 issues to
go. Exactly. They need to move quicker.
I know.
Because this is just dragging
out. They can't get it out fast enough. So, I mean, I'll be honest. I really enjoyed this issue for what it was. I gave it an 8 out of 10. What did you give it?
2.
So we're at completely different ends of the scale. Fair enough. Make your own mind up, listeners. You know what I'm saying? Because I found it was better than Secret Empire 3, which I just found was boring. Yeah, but anyway. Now, Stu, I didn't get a chance to read Bank on Quest 2. It was out this week in stores. Did you get a chance to read this one?
I did. If you want to hold off till next week until you've read it.
Oh, I'm okay. No, go ahead. No, it's cool.
Because you and I have very different opinions on Bank on Quest.
Oh, really? Did you enjoy it over there?
I did enjoy the first one. I was on the fence of the first one.
That's correct. Yeah, I remember that.
Well, you were a fan of the first one.
I enjoyed the first one a lot, yeah.
This one, it felt very short. Like a very short book. Especially after Secret Empire just feels long.
No, oh, it's so long.
Even if the pages aren't that many, it just feels
it's
long.
It's slow, dude. It's slow is how I would describe it.
Yeah, like, it takes you a long time to get through that book.
It's mind-numbingly boring as well.
Particularly enjoyable.
But, like, nothing's happening? Like, yeah, such as I just talking
straight
such
from both Secret Empires into Bane Conquest.
Bane Conquest, I imagine, is action, like Chuck doing action, yeah?
Quicker, not much action in this one. There's one fight scene.
Well, all right, let's.
Wait until you've read.
Yeah, let me. Because I'd rather do a proper review next week. Okay, I'll come back next week. And we'll have read it and we'll do a
go for it. Because I think we're going to have differing opinions.
And that's cool. That's fucking comic book opinions, man.
So yeah,
fair enough. Now trade of the week, Stu. Spider-Man Legacy. Your suggestion, buddy.
Spider-Girl Legacy.
Sorry, man. Spider-Girl Legacy. Your suggestion, man. Okay. No. I want to be fair to this comment because I read it on Marvel Unlimited. Look, large chunks of it I didn't mind. It basically tells a story of Mayday Parker in an alternate reality. It's almost like 20 years later. Spider-Man Peter Parker has grown up. He's married to Mary Jane. He's had his kid, Mayday, who's about 13, 14.
So it's set 15 years after. So Mayday's 15.
Okay, 15.
It's set 15 years after. In our universe, Mary Jane, her daughter died in childbirth.
Oh.
So May didn't survive. And this is an alternate reality where
she... Oh, sorry, right. Yeah, okay, gotcha, yeah.
Yeah, and set 15 years after.
In the real universe, did Mary Jane have a miscarriage?
I don't know whether they labelled it a miscarriage. I think it was a complication in childbirth.
Oh, okay. Right. I didn't realise that.
Yeah, their daughter died during childbirth.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Another Parker Luck type scenario.
Wow, I honestly did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay, but in this reality, she was born.
In this reality, yeah, she's born healthy.
Yep, okay.
Peter Parker's still doing his thing as Spider-Man.
Except in this reality, he has stopped doing it because his leg's been ripped off by Norman Osborn in their final battle.
He stopped well after Mayday was born.
Mm.
So he was Spider-Man at the time of her birth.
Yes.
Still doing his thing. And then he has a battle with the Green Goblin in which he kills the Green Goblin.
Yep.
But in the process, he loses his leg.
Yes. Yep. And he's got this cool grey streak in his hair.
Yeah, it felt very Doctor Strange. You know, yeah, he's like a little white.
Yeah, a little sort of like.
And he's got that in the centre.
Yeah.
And he's got a little. He's got a bit of.
He's got a goatee, I think.
A little goatee. Yeah. It looks pretty cool.
Visually cool. And pretty much the story of her in school as she's also coming into her spider powers.
Yeah, so she kind of inherits them, similar to a mutant, I suppose.
Yeah, genetically, passed down through Peter.
Puberty and kind of develops his spider powers over time.
Yep, and she's already a pretty good basketball player and she becomes really good.
Yeah, and but she, at the time she didn't realise that her dad was ever Spider-Man.
No, and then she quickly finds out, sort of it all becomes painfully obvious to her.
Yeah, so in a basketball match she dunks from above the hoop.
Yep.
And they...
And they're like, geez.
May and Pete sit her aside and go, yeah, by the way, I was Spider-Man. We need to...
And they show her the threads, I think, don't they? They show her the whole kitty caboodle because then she then goes out and starts being Spider-Girl.
Yeah, and it's kind of a story where she wants to do it, but Peter Parker's obviously had a run of bad luck.
Sure. He's very protective.
He wants to protect her at all costs.
Yeah.
So he doesn't want her going out, and that just antagonizes her to go out.
And, of course, it's quite different to the normal thing where, like, with Aunt May, he kept it a secret. It's impossible to keep a secret from Peter because she's on the news, a Spider-Girl.
And every time they see Spider-Girl, he knows exactly who it is.
And Peter's having a hernia, isn't he? He's so frustrated and so angry, like, about what's happening. And basically that's the course of the storyline. It gets to the final issue. Venom makes a comeback.
We see Green Goblin and Venom both come back.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, beating up the Dark Devil.
Yep.
Nova makes an appearance in the final issue.
Nova and, what was the character who came in, the janitor, changed into? The Dragon
Lord.
Dragon Lord. There's some weird cameos, the Fantastic Five, where Reed's a brain, and Johnny Franklin's Storm's joined. Running her. Yeah.
Sue Storm's, I don't know what happened to her, she's gone.
She's gone. Reed's now just a brain. And Sue Storm is replaced by, like a Skrull.
It's Johnny Storm's wife.
Yeah, who I believe he did marry at some point or something, or at least had a relationship with in the comics.
Yeah, where in this alternate reality they married and...
Look, overall as a comic, I did enjoy reading it. Like, I'm as a Marvel fan, I did feel it was a bit of a slog, The art, it was very much a product of its time of the late 90s. I read a lot of comics similar to this in the late 90s that weren't sort of quite 80s. This was written by Tom DeFalco, who was a big Spider-Man writer in the 80s and was a big editor at Marvel. It was very competent. The whole thing was competent. I thought it was a bit sloggy and they were trying to build the character, but I think they got some things really quite well done. The narration style was weird.
I didn't mind the narration. I think you're right. It was a bit of a slog at times.
Mm.
The artwork I enjoyed, though. It felt quite dynamic, the way they were showing these images flashing through the panels, kind of.
It was consistent, at least, too.
Yeah, and I found that artwork quite dynamic. I enjoyed that. The narration, it was a bit weird.
It was odd. It wasn't first person, but it wasn't third person. It was the God narration, omnipresent. Like,
well, it was Mayday.
Sort of, but it was also like...
It was from her point of view.
But it was also, but it was that narration where it's like, you go down to the basketball courts and you do this. Like, it's sort of, so it's describing what she's doing.
No, it was it was first person.
No, it was also you. That would also say you. That was where it was weird. It would slip into, you do this, you do that, where it's talking to the reader and also to the participant, to the actress or the lead character.
Yeah, but it was when mixing. She said you, it wasn't referring to her character.
Really? Because I got the impression the narration was at times.
No, the narration was... It's as if she'd seen the comic book without any narration and she was just filling in the blanks as a conversation.
Right, I see. Okay.
So it was, I did this, I was thinking this, this is what I felt.
Mm.
I thought my dad was thinking this.
But she wasn't saying I all the time. There was often it was saying you, because I made mention of it and notice of it. There's actually a term for it in narration when you're writing. It's not classic. It's not third person where it's like may did this, may did that. And it's not I did this, I did that. There was at times that, but it slipped into every now and then what's called omnipresent, where you do like you're the god and you switch between. So you're commentating on the character from the character's perspective, but you're still referring to them outside of themselves. So it's not I. Like, I went down and fought the Green Goblin.
I mean, I wasn't looking for that, but I certainly didn't read it that way.
Okay, well, anyway, it's a minor point. I did find it a bit of a slog in that it was doing a lot of world building, but I did enjoy it. I didn't mind it. I'm giving it a 6.5 out of 10. I didn't hate this by any means. I thought it was relatively interesting, and I thought it was quite ambitious.
I mean, I think this whole universe sprang from a what-if issue.
Oh, okay.
It was a what-if May had survived childbirth.
Yes.
So there was a single what-if issue that came out in the late 90s.
Yep.
And this spawned this series.
And it was very popular.
Well, yeah, longest-running female solo series.
Yeah, and I know that it got rescued from the cancellation at least twice, just due to fans' outcry.
Yeah, and they brought her into the main during the Spider-Verse crossovers. Yep. And I mean, it's been a popular character. I liked it a little more than you. I'm giving it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
It's certainly not one of my favourites of all time.
Good suggestion, though, Stu, like, because it's a bit left of field. Something I hadn't read before. I was quite excited to read it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm going for with this. It's a bit out there, it's a bit weird, but it's enjoyable.
Did you enjoy some of the world building? Because I did. I like seeing the alternate versions when she went to the Avengers and they were all different people. She's like,
Jubilee's sitting in there.
Yeah, Jubilee's just like the center of control.
And I enjoyed seeing the Fantastic Five when Thing had like a metallic arm.
Yeah.
And little details like that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's because when they wrote the What If issue, they designed all these characters thinking they were going to bring them in as cameos in that issue.
Yep.
And they never got around to it.
Right.
And they went to the editor and said, we've got all this world to use. We've got these characters built up.
Mm.
Why not give us a miniseries and see where it goes?
Yeah.
And they kind of agreed to that and it took off.
Mm.
This series is 7 issues long, but it kept going.
Well, I can tell you this. The art was cool. In the Zero issue, Bill Sienkiewicz did the art as well.
Yeah.
I quite liked the art. It was a bit different to what I'm used to. The entire vibe I got, though, was I remember reading comics in the late 90s and there was a lot of this kind of stuff that wasn't quite as polished as it would be today, but it was a bit more advanced than some of the comics that were out at the time. It was quite meta, this comic at times, and it was really dated at one point when she goes, you're very Alanis Morissette today, and I was just like, wow.
Yeah, those references felt very dated.
You've got to be so careful of pop culture references.
Yeah.
She should have said, isn't it ironic? You know, that would have only just completed the circle.
Yeah, I feel like she probably shouldn't have done those cultural references at all. But
I actually quite...
I mean, it kind of worked with the character.
Yeah.
You knew exactly when you were reading it for.
She was a well-done character as well. I liked the way they weren't going for cheesecake. They were going for a sort of... It was almost a little emo bit. It was a reasonably well developed lead character in Mayday. I thought Mayday was actually one of my favorite things in the issues. I thought this character's got some legs. I could see why she became popular.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Like, look, I honestly, I'm giving it 6.5, but I could see if I was at the time in the demographic really enjoying it. It reminded me of when I read in the sort of around the same period I read Kyle Rayner Green Lantern, where they pretty much ditched the old Green Lantern, which was Hal Jordan, and went with a everyman, like a Peter Parker-style Green Lantern. And it was very much building from the ground up, and you saw the world through this everyman character's eyes, and in this case you saw the school experience through Mayday's eyes, and they built the world around her. And there's a certain appeal to that kind of writing.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of nostalgia in there now.
Sure.
Seeing a cross between Peter Parker and MJ.
I was really interested in that.
And seeing the super popular kid now at high school that has the brains but is a sporting god and is now struggling with being too popular, whereas Peter had the complete opposite.
Yep.
I enjoyed it for what it was.
Yep. Yeah.
I'd recommend you go and read it, especially if it's on Marvel Unlimited.
It's on Marvel Unlimited, yeah. All 100 issues are. Every single issue is on Marvel Unlimited.
Exactly, go for it.
Yeah, go for it. You may as well. That's where Marvel Unlimited is great. You can just go bing, bing, bing. I was reading on the train.
So for your price, you can read all your classics.
And if you're a Spider-Man fan, check this out. You're doing yourself a disservice if you don't at least give it a glance, you know? And Tom DeFalco, he wrote Spider-Man after Roger Stern and up to David Michelinie.
Yeah.
So he pretty much covered, like, the beginning of Venom and stuff like that as well, sort of like up till that period. He had a really good run on Spider-Man. Tom DeFalco was a pretty good writer, and he was also a pretty long-running Marvel editor as well. So the guy's got pedigree. He knew what he was doing. Mm. So, you know, you're sort of in good hands of a storyteller, if you know what I mean. Even if it's not your favourite sort of thing. Now, Stu, we were looking at different trades to do for next week, and you're making a good point here, Stu. Yes, I agree. Judge Red Case File Volume 5 is one of the options. Yeah? You thumbs up for that? Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I think we should go for that one.
Yeah, excellent. We've got some other ones coming up on the agenda, Stu. Mockingbird is, you know, for down the track. Some classic Punisher. I've got quite a few. Do you like the way I just put classic Punisher?
The constant suggestion.
I said, or something else of Stu's choice. But Stu, yeah, I agree. So next week, and I'll give you the actual case file, Stu. I've actually got, it's like a big, thick case file. I'll give it to you.
Nice, okay.
Because I've got it digitally as well, so we're all sorted. Case file, we're going to do, listeners, Judge Red Case File Volume 5. Now, the case files, just so to clue readers in, they cover Judge Red from the very beginning, from when he started in the late 70s. And this one was recommended by one of the guys over at Fist of Khonshu last week. And it's sort of Judge Red, I think it's around the 83 to 84 region, like in 1983 to 84. He's been around for about 5 or 6 years. We're really starting to get into the heart of some of the real classic Dread stories of the 80s. Stuff like Apocalypse War's in there. It'll be an interesting one to read, Stu. I would probably say make notes, because Judge Red, the way it's done, is there are so many stories. It's week to week. So when you read a case file about that thick, it's a lot of stories. So my recommendation would be, sort of for some of the bigger stories, make a few notes just to help you, because there'll be some one-shots in there as well.
Yeah.
But it is, I'm looking really forward to it. I've actually been reading myself over the last few days. I've been reading Case File, I think it's Volume 8. Okay. And I've been falling into Judge Red. I just wanted to get the feel for Judge Red. I like the classic Judge Red. It's good stuff. So I'll give that to you. Any other little tidbits, Stu? We've covered a lot of material this show.
No, I think that's about it for this week, though.
Yeah, it's been great. Now, I look forward to editing. It's been quite the feat. We've got the spoiler review. We've got all sorts of things going on, so it's going to be an interesting one. We'll be back here next week as per normal, listeners. We love you very much, and we'll catch you then. Bye.
Bye.